All right.
Nick!
Gentlemen!
Nick's your buddy. Kind of guy you can drink beer with.
Start your engine!
My papa's son wandering out a smoking gun. Now some of you would live through me and lock me up and throw away the key. Or just find a place to hide away and hope that I'll just go away. But I feel alright. I feel alright tonight. Alright, I feel alright tonight. And I bring you precious contraband and ancient tales.
All right. Good morning, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. And getting a little late start. Normally we're on from 11 p.m. to 4 a.m. Late Hawks game. And we'll play back the Blackhawks Express later in the show. It's an unfortunate Blackhawks Express, but we always play it the morning after a game. So that'll be coming up later in the show. We're live in the Skyline Studio, 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago, and we're here until 4 a.m., as we are every weekday morning. And it is Friday, so that means all of our regular Friday features will begin. We will have Straight Out of Context. That's when you listen to this radio station 24/7, whenever anybody at any time says something that you can pull out of context and it sounds a little dirty. You can jot down the time, who said it, and then send it to nickdshow@gmail.com. And also, that's the same with Nick D Show Spies. That's when you listen to this radio station 24/7. Whenever anybody mentions me, we want to know about it. You become a spy. Jot down the day, the time, who said it, and send it to nickdshow@gmail.com. We also have You Big Dummy. That's where we read real news stories about real dumb people doing real dumb stuff, and then we vote on who's the biggest dummy. Tom votes, I vote, and then we open the phone lines. First person through becomes our third vote on who is the dummy of the week. Vic's Picks. Our good friend Vic Vaughn has been on a musical journey. He went through the top 100 albums of all time, according to Rolling Stone, and now he's doing the top albums of the 21st century. And he's making his way through that, and we'll find out what albums and music he's been learning about and listening to as Vic's Picks continues. We'll do that at 2:30. And then, of course, Fly Jams Friday. Yeah, Luscious Hushes will play the Fly Jams, get your requests in, R&B, soul, anything that's fly, and we'll get to that a little bit later. We like to kick off your weekend on a funky note. So 312-981-7200 for your Fly Jam requests and anything you want to jump in here, talk or text, 312-981-7200. Coming up in just a few minutes, our good friend Kevin J. O'Connor. Great guy, great Chicagoan, and also a fantastic actor who has appeared in a ton of movies. And we'll talk to him all about that. It's been a while since Kevin's been on the show. I haven't seen Kevin in a while. He was on that show, now I'm blanking on the name of it, the Kirsten Dunst show, Florida, God in Florida.
I'm Becoming a God in Central Florida.
Yeah, he was terrific on that.
Very good.
So he's been in a ton of stuff, too. I mean, we'll go into that. Now I know, Tom, he will always be the guy from The Mummy for you.
He'll always be Benny.
Benny from The Mummy.
And he's just an amazing, like, heel villain in that, and he's so good.
He's great. Did you see him as Igor in Van Helsing?
I did, and he was the part that I liked the most about that movie.
Me too.
He's amazing in Widows as like the bartender of the fireside.
Great in Widows. He's great in everything. He was unbelievable in There Will Be Blood.
Absolutely.
And it was great because I know Kevin, so I actually saw the movie with him sitting next to me, which was insane. And I also got a lot of behind-the-scenes stories, and obviously you know how I feel about Paul Thomas Anderson and what it was like to work with Daniel Day-Lewis and all of that stuff. He was also in The Master, and he had some stories about Joaquin. Yeah.
He keeps wearing this weird Joker makeup.
Yeah. And he's also in, and I told you this yesterday, you have to see Deep Rising.
Yeah.
You have to. It's excited. Steven Sommers, and I like it more than the Mummy movies. It's just so, it's Treat Williams, and it's about just a giant underwater monster. And Kevin is unbelievably funny in the movie. It's great. It's a lot of fun. Deep Rising. Put that one. I know you're going to be watching all the Star Wars movies, but at some point you got to sneak in Deep Rising. I think it's only like 90 minutes. So, but anyway, Kevin's going to join us because he's got a new movie called Colwell, which stars Karen Allen, and it's going to be screening at Facets this weekend, and Kevin's going to be at a couple of the screenings. He'll be at a screening tonight with a Q&A at 7 o'clock, And then tomorrow, he'll be Saturday, he'll be there for the 5 o'clock and the 7 o'clock screenings as well. So if you want to come out and see Kevin, do a Q&A and see his new movie that he's in with Karen Allen. It's called Colwell. And Kevin's awesome, and I'm very excited. I haven't talked to him in a while, so it's going to be great to catch up with Kevin. So Kevin J. O'Connor on the show, and all of our regular Friday features as well. We are also, it's Dick Van Dyke's birthday. 94 years old, Dick Van Dyke. 94. I love Dick Van Dyke. So we're going to talk about some of the greatest Dick Van Dyke Show episodes and some of the really cool movies that he's been in and just his career in general. The guy's a national treasure. I love Dick Van Dyke. I love him. And it's 94. God bless him. 94 years old.
And he's still as spry as ever.
He's did you see the
Mary Poppins Returns?
Mary Poppins Returns.
He's up. He's dancing.
The guy's in his 90s. He's dancing around like he's 15.
I know.
Anyway, I love the guy. So it's his birthday. We'll celebrate that. And also, we didn't get to this yesterday. Hopefully, we'll get to it this morning. Celebs are spoiled. I don't know if you knew that. Tom, did you know that? Celebrities are spoiled?
I've heard things.
Yeah. Well, we'll definitely dive into that, too. So that's what's coming up on the show with all the Friday features as well. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Let me say officially hello to Tom Hush. Tom, how are you, buddy?
I am very good, Nick. How are
you? All right. I'm okay. I'm all right. Excited about a couple of movies this weekend.
Yes.
Interested about Richard Jewell. I'm just interested in terms of what people are saying about it, you know, in terms of what Clint Eastwood has done in portraying, you know, the media in the movie. But I hear, like, all the performances are great, and it's, like, really well done, and it's, like, one of Clint's more solid films of the past few years. So I'm looking forward to that. And the Jumanji movie is going to be ridiculous. So
I'm just saying, Jake Kasdan did a great job on the last one. I know it wasn't for you, but for everybody else in the world,
I like the original Jumanji.
Well, yeah,
with Robin Williams and Kirsten Dunst. I like that Joe Johnston directed that one, if I'm not mistaken, or as Eric refers to him as three-star Joe Johnston,
very middle of the road guy.
Like, that's what he makes. His movies are good. Like, he did, like, Rocketeer, and he did Honey, I Shrunk the Kids.
Jurassic Park 3.
Yeah, which is pretty good.
It's good.
Yeah. So, all right. So, anyway, that's what's coming up on the show Friday morning, everybody. 312-981-7200 for talk and text. You can follow us on Twitter at Nick D Show. You can stay connected on our Facebook page, too, at facebook.com/Nick D Show. And subscribe to our podcast. Every single second of every single show is podcast. If you can't listen live, second best thing is to listen on the podcast. Go to iTunes or WGNradio.com or wherever you get your podcast. Subscribe. It's free, and it'll be automatically delivered to your device at your leisure, bro. You can listen. Okay, let's take a break. When we come back, Kevin J. O'Connor will be with us right here on 720 WGN. Mama's very sweet, yeah. Always eats a meat. Joy comes on strong. Bet your life is putting a song. Hold on. Well, welcome back, everyone. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN live in the Skyline studio. We're here till 4 a.m., as we are every weekday morning. Friday, all the regular Friday features are coming up. We're going to celebrate Dick Van Dyke's 94th birthday by going back and looking at some of the classic episodes of the show and his films and all that cool stuff. Our phone number is 312-981-7200 for talk and text. I would like to welcome to the show my guest. He's a terrific actor. He's been in a ton of things, and he's currently in a movie called Colwell with Karen Allen, and it's going to be screened at the Facets this weekend. And he's going to be there for a Q&A tonight after the 7 o'clock screening, and tomorrow he'll be there for the 5 o'clock and 7 o'clock screenings on Saturday at Facets for a Q&A following the screening of Colwell. He's a terrific actor and an old friend, and I want to welcome him back to the show. It's Kevin J. O'Connor. Kevin, how are you, man?
Hi, Nick. How are you?
Good, good. Good to talk to you. I haven't talked to you in a long time.
You too. It's good to hear your voice.
Yeah,
yes,
absolutely. So, how you been? You've been busy. I know you've been working on, you've been doing a lot of TV as of recently.
Yeah, that's, I think, the it's where a lot of the work is now. So,
yeah.
And some really good work, too. So,
absolutely.
I've been lucky. Yeah,
no, you know, with all the you know, the ways to watch television now, with all the streaming networks, and I mean, major actors and stars are doing TV now. It's so much different than it was years ago.
I know. I just heard you mention Family Classics.
Yeah.
That's probably what I'm more accustomed to watching,
yeah,
is something like Family Classics, as opposed to, there are so many things out there now. It's just amazing. So many streaming places to go and on so many shows. You know, how many times have you looked up some? I'm like, I've never heard of the show before.
Yeah.
And it's nominated for 20 Emmys, and I've never heard of it.
Right.
And I'm supposedly in show business, right. You know, supposedly.
Well, you grew up here in Chicago, Kevin. You're from here, and you mentioned Family Classics. Did you watch it when you were a kid?
Absolutely. Yeah. Is there a host now? Are they going to have
Steve Sanders from Channel 9 News is going to host.
Oh yeah, I like him a lot.
And because at first, obviously, it was Frazier Thomas, and then when Frazier passed away, my good friend Roy Leonard.
Of course, your first boss, Roy Leonard.
My mentor took over, and then they had Dean Richards, our good friend Dean Richards, hosted it a few times, and now Steve Sanders is hosting it tonight. So it should be fun to have that back.
That is great, yeah.
You remember all the, man, you know, you grew up here. You remember all the local, remember when we used to have, like, local TV?
Absolutely. Oh. It was amazing.
And they don't have that anymore. That's gone. The only guy we have is Sven Gulli, as you know.
I know, our mutual friend.
Yeah.
And that's why I love that show, because everything else is gone.
Yeah.
I mean, and that's why I think people around the country love that show.
Yeah.
Because a lot of these guys our age, or around our age, have memories of their own TV hosts.
Yeah.
And when they see Sven Gulli, I think it just brings back those memories.
I love the fact that he's now nationwide. That just makes me, that Rich is now seen nationwide and worldwide. People, he gets letters and he gets cards from people all around the world, and it's great.
I know. I gave a friend of mine who's a prop master on, I think, Supergirl, or he was on Supergirl or some show, and he wore his Sven Gulli t-shirt, and he said he had like three or four people coming up to him, this was in L.A., going, oh my God, I love that guy. You know, they knew who he was, even though they're from wherever. None of them were from Chicago.
Yeah, it's amazing. And Rich is just such a pro, and he, you know, you've been on the show, you see the kind of work that he does on that show. Oh my God, he writes everything. It's just, it's incredible. I've been on the show, too, and I witnessed it firsthand. He does unbelievable amount of work for every episode.
It's amazing. It's like just from another era. You know, when you watch him, you're like being thrown back into a time machine and, you know, watching someone on the, you know, the early 50s television, you know, having to do everything, you know, themselves.
Yeah.
But Jim Roach is a great guy.
Jim Roach is great. He's, you know, he's his right hand man. A really wonderful guy. I love those guys, and it's great. And it was just so fun to be on that show. And you were hilarious the last time you were on the show.
That was a while ago.
It was a while back. But so this is my producer now is Tom Hush, and he's a huge fan, particularly of. Now, when I said I wanted to get Kevin on the show, that was, you know, because I'm friends with you, Kevin, as you know, we go back.
Sure.
And I was like, I got to get him on the show to talk about his new movie with Karen Allen and all that cool stuff. It'll be fun to get him on the show. And you immediately said, oh, my God. What did you say?
I said, oh, my God, that's Benny.
That's Benny. Of course.
he loves you in those movies.
Yes. That's weird. We did a I did an interview with Entertainment Weekly, which is oddly enough monthly now.
Yeah.
I don't think it was ever weekly. It was twice a month, I think.
Yeah.
But anyway, it's monthly now. And it was for the 20th anniversary of that movie.
Oh,
and I could not believe it.
It is the 20th anniversary, isn't it? It did come out in 1999.
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, so
did they get several of us?
Brendan Fraser and everybody?
They got everyone, I think.
Yeah. Well, that's cool. Wow, 20 years. Jeez, I feel old, Kevin.
You feel old, yeah. I know.
Now, I was telling him since he loved the Mummy movies. He loved you in Van Helsing. But here's the deal. Kevin has to admit this. He has not seen Deep Rising.
Wow.
That's kind of unforgivable, quite frankly.
Yeah. I know, yeah. I think of, you know, I know you've brought that up with me several times, that movie, because I know you're a fan of it.
Yes, yes, big fan. I love it. And you're hilarious in it. And it's just such a fun movie. And it was one of those movies that kind of came out of nowhere. You know what I mean? Like, I was like, what is this? And then I saw it, and it was just so amazingly entertaining. I love
it. Opened right up against another boat movie. I don't know if you've heard of it. It was called Titanic. Yes.
Yeah, I think that was a little independent film, wasn't it?
It was.
Yeah. But it's gone on. But Deep Rising has gone on to have a massive cult following, right? Is that what you get recognized for that one a lot?
It has. It's bizarre because it was pretty quiet for a few years after that film came out. But I've heard more about it in recent years than I ever did then.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. Mm-hmm. Now, let's go back to the beginning. You're a stage guy here. You worked at Steppenwolf. You worked on stage all over the place here. But your first movie, and this right out of the gate, and Tom, I don't know if you know this or not. Do you know what his first role was?
I do not.
You know the first director he ever worked with?
Oh,
it'd be Francis Ford Coppola.
Oh my God.
Yeah. So you worked. How did you get Peggy Sue Got Married? And you're so great.
Well, actually, the first person to ever hire me, this is interesting, is Al Franken.
Is that right?
And I did a local movie. I only had maybe one or two lines. It was called, I've never seen the movie. It had two titles, one of which was One More Saturday Night.
Oh, I've seen that. I've seen that.
And it was Franken and Davis.
Yeah.
And that put an end to their comedy duo film career.
I saw that movie. Of course I did. Because anything, you know, Kevin, anything that was associated with SNL in any way, I saw. Because
Right.
And so I saw. Sure. I remember that. What did you play in that movie? I haven't seen it in years.
I played some, I don't know, some. I was giving, piercing some kid's ear for a dollar or something. I was some thug. And I had one or two lines.
Right.
But Al Franken hired me, and I used to bump into him in New York once in a while. And he did something for Comedy Central, and he used me. He wanted to use me in it, and he said that I owed him for giving me my first lines in a movie. Uh-huh. But then I went to almost, oh God, weeks or a month after that, and I did Peggy Sue Got Married with Francis Coppola. Yeah.
Yeah. Now, how did you get that? You auditioned, obviously. What was it like to audition?
I auditioned. This is very odd, and this says a lot about Coppola, especially then. Now it seems like this would seem more acceptable. I had written a few sort of monologues and for myself, and I don't know why I even wrote that. It wasn't for the purpose of auditioning, but it was just something I was having fun with, and I put one of them on tape. And a woman from New York, who eventually became my agent, she sent it to the casting director. And I think Coppola really liked that it was just sort of this, it was terrible. The lighting was awful. And I think that appealed to him, this sort of low-budget monologue that weird kid had made.
All right.
And then they flew me out there immediately. I mean, the same day I think they received it, they flew me out to L.A. This is a true story. I'll make it really fast. I went to L.A. I'd never flown before.
Mm-hmm.
I was meeting Francis Ford Coppola okay. on the 4th of July because he was going later that day with his family to some big event.
Right.
So I had to meet him at like 6:30 in the morning at a closed Universal. They took me from the hotel and drove me into the Universal movie studio, the lot.
Yeah, yeah.
I didn't know where I was being taken to, so I didn't even know I was on the lot. And I finished doing the audition with him, which was, like, surreal.
Yeah.
And I came outside, and I sat on a curb. This is a total true story, waiting for a cab to take me back to the hotel because the driver that picked me up wasn't there.
Mm-hmm.
And it was Coppola, not even someone from the office. It was Coppola himself who had to come out and tell me, you know, this isn't really a street. This is total truth. This is a studio. Why don't you go in there and use the phone? I was like, oh my God, it was humiliating. I was literally sitting on the curb like we would in, you know,
yeah.
like I was in Elgin or something waiting for.
That's great.
That's a true story.
You were great in that movie. And I got to tell you, I've told you this before. My first ex-wife was in love with you in that movie. Oh my God, the rebel, the leather jacket, she was in love with you in that movie.
Yeah. You should have seen me trying to ride the motorcycle for the first week with the stunt guy yelling at me.
Kevin, hang on, okay?
Sure.
All right, Kevin J. O'Connor is here. Tremendous actor, great guy, and Chicagoan. And Colwell is his new movie. We'll talk about that more right after we break.
Hey, O'Connell! It looks to me like I've got all the horses!
Hey, Benny! Looks to me like you're on the wrong side of the river!
All right, welcome back. So that was, you're indulging yourself there, Tom. You needed to play that, right?
When given the opportunity.
Okay. Know. Well, there you go. Well, we have Benny, the actual actor who played that part, on the line. And Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. Kevin, welcome back. Kevin J. O'Connor is here. Welcome back.
Thank you, Tom.
let's. I want to talk about a couple of recent things that you've done, and then we're going to jump into Colwell. Man, I am really disappointed that no one went to go see Widows. I thought that movie was great, and the acting was so good, and you were fantastic in it. What was it like working on that one?
Oh, it was great. It was like I was really nervous about doing it because I hadn't met Steve McQueen when I got the role, and I didn't know what he would be like on set. And he's such a he's a real, sounds sort of pretentious or something, but he's a real artist, you know. He really is, and he's also a real character, you know. It's like, I don't know, it seems like it would be, I don't know, maybe working with, you know, someone like Godard or something like that, you know. He's just loose and crazy, and if something comes into his brain at that second, he throws it out to you, and you have to, you know, you have to be there to be ready to do it.
Yeah.
But it was great, really, really great, really, really good experience,
And a really terrific movie. I mean, again, like I said, the reception was very disappointing because I thought, you know, it was a real crowd pleaser. You know what I mean? It was a great thriller. Also, the acting was just insanely good.
It gets all these great reviews, and it gets pumped up. And then, it didn't do what they wanted it to do. Oh. I think it's done well now on DVD.
Yeah. Once people catch up with it and go, oh, wow, did I miss this thing on the big screen? Because it's so good.
Yes.
It
reminded me of almost a 70s movie where they took a genre like a thriller, an action thriller, but there was this sort of social underpinning to it, which was really,
I agree with
really
you.
Great. You don't see that, that mashup, you don't see much anymore.
That's true. And you got to work in the legendary Fireside Bowl.
That's great. I'd been to that place. When I got in there, I said, I'd been here before, years before, but I had been there. It's so cool.
Yeah. I used to be on a league there when I was like 11 at the Fireside. I was on the bowling league when I was like 11. But anyway, I wanted to mention Widows because I think more people should see it, and you're great in it.
Thanks.
Yeah. Now, here's a movie that I saw earlier this year that I found incomprehensible, and it's not your fault, Kevin.
Uh-huh.
Can you explain Captive State?
No. I can't.
What was it like working on that? Because I had no idea what was going on during the entire movie.
The script was really good. I mean, it was maybe a little convoluted, but it was really interesting. It was like these so much going on, maybe too much. It was interesting, and I sort of, you know, you'd read it, and you'd go, I think I missed, what is the connection with this? And you'd go back, and there usually was a connecting factor to some of the things that at first read you missed.
Yeah.
But I think when they went and edited it, I think they maybe realized that it should have been maybe a miniseries or something that was just too much.
Yeah.
So I didn't even, when they cut the film, I think they lost quite a bit of what they needed to have in there, but I understand because it could only, you know, it had to go one way or another
and that, you know, the director of that movie directed that really great Rise of the Planet of the Apes,
which I thought was great.
Me too. And I thought his remake of The Gambler was pretty solid, and so when I saw Captain,
he's a really smart guy. I mean, you can see it in there. It's not a failed sort of popcorn movie. It may be a failed, but it's a failed intelligent, thriller. I mean, it's, but it's just, I just think in the editing process and maybe I don't know.
Yeah. It was, I was like, what is happening? during. So let's talk a little bit about the TV stuff that you've been doing. You were in the Stephen King 11/22/63.
Yes.
What was that like? Was that cool? You played the yellow card man.
Yes, I'll tell you one thing, just one story about it. I wasn't even there this day, which sucked, but I think you'll like this. There's little Stephen King Easter eggs throughout that thing.
Yes.
I can't. So they even have Christine is being washed in some kid's driveway in one little section.
Yeah.
Stephen King came out that day to Toronto, and he signed the dashboard of the car. And the heat, it was an old car, and it was already hot outside, so it was overheated, the car. And I guess his signature sort of melted in kind of a Munsters-looking, spooky sort of, which was supposed to be great.
Yeah.
You know, his signature in Christine.
Yeah.
But it was interesting. I got along with James Franco really well, mm-hmm. and I had never met him before.
Yeah. Well, it's you know, I know Stephen King fans loved it, and it was, like you said, full of Easter eggs. I mean, way beyond anything that I could even comprehend. You know what I mean?
Me too. Yeah, I missed several of them because I just didn't know certain things. But yeah.
I also loved you in On Becoming a God in Central Florida, which I think is a really terrific show.
Yes. Yeah, I remember reading that I wear a double-breasted pinstripe suit
right.
with no shoes,
right.
and I said, no shoes, so I had to walk around barefoot. And before I did any take, inside the studio or outside especially, there was a guy with a broom, and his job was to make sure there was no glass or nails and anything, because I was barefoot
right.
through the whole thing.
Right.
And, yeah.
Oh, okay.
So, but very interesting, very well written.
Yeah.
Kirsten Dunst is great. She was one of the producers of the show. The reason I was there, Jesse, Plemons.
Yeah.
Of course. I had briefly worked with him on The Master, and I believe that was the reason I was in that show. He thought, you know who would be good for this role? It was me. So it was really cool when I met them. They were all prepared because Kirsten and he were the ones that pretty much cast me.
Yeah, well, that's great. That's great. Now, you mentioned The Master. You did two films with Paul Thomas Anderson, who, as you know, Kevin, he's my favorite director.
Yeah.
He's my favorite.
Yes.
And, you know, you mentioned The Master, but you were also in There Will Be Blood. And we've talked about There Will Be Blood several times, but just briefly, what was it like to work with Daniel Day-Lewis?
He is really, he is so intense while you're doing a scene with him. I mean, he's one of those actors you can really, I don't know how to describe it. You can feel everything seems real. Everything seems authentic, but also amplified.
Yeah.
You know? And it's,
and especially that role, though, too. I mean, it was such an intense role.
Oh, yes. I mean, we did a scene, a long scene that actually got cut from the film where he gets drunk.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm trying to, sway him out of getting any drunker, and at the end of the scene, I kind of lift him up. He's completely loaded, wasted.
Yeah.
And I bring him out of this. We're in this big workroom with the men from the field, from the oil fields, who are having lunch. And the first take he was a little drunk. The second, third take he was more drunk, more intense. And by the sixth one, it was so, it was shocking to be in front of him.
Yeah.
And you couldn't help but be in the scene.
Yeah.
You know, with him. He's just a great, you know, it's no news, but he's a great, great actor.
Yeah, absolutely. It must have been like really amazing to work with him on that movie. And I adore that movie. I love that film. And I thought, did you see Phantom Thread?
Yes.
He was phenomenal in that, and that's another great movie.
I think it's one of Paul's best movies.
I agree. I thought that movie was amazing, and it was just, it had such a great tone to it, because it was like this really intense sort of love story, but also about creativity, and then it just gets weird, you know?
it is. It's like most of Paul's films, but what's so great about Paul's films, for me, are the, and I, when I watched him direct, I saw him in action, how detailed every scene is.
Yeah.
You know, how every prop, everything is so thought out, and he's really a brilliant guy.
Yeah, he is. Now you work in all kinds of genres, and you have made some good, you have made some crazy, like sort of horror genre movies. Do you like working
yes.
on those?
I do, I do until they're released. but I, you know, it is fun because I'm a fan of, you know, Roger Corman films.
Sure.
And have you ever read that great book? I'm sure if you haven't read it, you'd love it. I can never remember the title. It's like Nurses, Sea Monsters, and
oh,
something.
Yeah. No. I've had the author on the show. I've had her on the show. She worked with Corman and wrote this tremendous book about him, and I can't remember the name, I think it's a guy.
Okay, this is like a coffee table book.
Oh, okay. All
the
right.
whole book is just interviews, you know, those books that are just sort of interviews.
Yeah.
But you got to read that. It's great.
Yeah.
And it has everyone talking about him, Ron Howard and Alan Arkish and everyone talking about him. But I love those. So sometimes it's fun for me as a film fan to be on those horror movies, and when there's no time to do anything, and you know you have four scenes left, and it's 5 a.m, and they have to stop at 6:15.
Yeah.
You know, so there's something pretty crazy and exciting about doing those.
Yeah, they're fun. They're actually fun to watch. Now, you know, it's amazing. You know, Kevin. How Dick Wolf has basically taken over this city.
Yeah.
And you appeared on Chicago PD.
I did about a season on that. Yes.
Yeah. What was it like to work on that? I mean, it's they've hired so many local people. It's great for the actors and the crews here in the city.
It is. I'm really happy for the crews and the actors, you know. It was nice. It's fast. It's TV. It's procedural TV, you know, but some of the actors, Alex Cotillas, who I'd worked with years ago, and a few of the other people, I worked with a couple of the other people, so it was nice.
Yeah.
And some of the crew people that I really, really liked.
Yeah.
I've worked with several times.
Yeah. You know, it's funny, you actually work with one of my best friends, my friend Mike View. You worked with him on Mob Doctor.
Yes.
Yeah.
Mike's a funny guy.
He's a very funny guy. So, all right, listen, let's take a quick break. When we come back, we'll dive into Colwell, okay, Kevin?
Yeah, sure.
Okay, cool. Kevin J. O'Connor is with us. He's great. He's a terrific actor and a good friend and a Chicagoan. And he's in a movie called Colwell with Karen Allen. It's screened. It'll be screening at Facets for the full week, but he will be at the screening tonight at 7 and at tomorrow's screenings at 5 p.m. and 7 p.m. to do a Q&A. Kevin J. O'Connor is with us, and we'll get back to the conversation after this. Man's wet on the wheel. Right, welcome back, everyone. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Skyline Studio. It's Friday morning. All the regular Friday features, Straight Out of Context, Nick D Show, Spies, You Big Dummy, and Flaw Jams Friday, all coming up. And Vic's Picks will kick it all off in just a little bit. We're also going to talk about Dick Van Dyke, 94 years old today. So we're going to celebrate that. And also, the news is next from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. Kevin J. O'Connor is with us, terrific actor, who's been in a ton of stuff. His latest movie is called Colwell with Karen Allen. And Kevin, welcome back.
Hey.
All right. By the way, we got a text here. It says, Kevin's biography lists him as the southwest side of Chicago. Can I ask what neighborhood he grew up in? What neighborhood did you grow up in, Kevin?
I was actually born in Little Flower neighborhood in 80th and Damon.
Uh-huh.
And then I didn't move that far to around the Bogan High School area in Pulaski.
Okay. Well, there you go. That's where you grew up. Okay. Let's talk
about... I have to bring up something. Was
that
Oriel Samuelson?
Yes.
Is he still around?
Oh, yeah. Oh yeah,
oh,
Orion.
Good for him.
Yeah, Orion is still kicking. Orion, he does the business reports in the morning still.
That's great.
He's a legend, and you know
he is.
Yeah, that's him. He's still,
that's amazing.
Yeah. He's been in the business. He's been 60 something years. He's been doing this.
So he's got to be in his.
He's in his late '80s, I think. Mid '80s, mid to
wow.
late '80s. Yeah,
good for him.
Still doing it too. Yeah,
and Dick Van Dyke's 94.
94 years old.
Oh, my God.
And he was just in Mary Poppins Returns last year, and he had a dance number.
My brother saw, I didn't see it, but my brother Chris said that it was the highlight for him of that film.
Oh, no question about it. It was without question the best part of the film. No question.
Yes. And I loved, you know, a film I wish more people would watch is The Comic.
Oh, The Comic is a great movie. Yeah.
He is so great in that movie.
Yeah. Yeah. We'll talk about that one for sure when we jump into the Dick Van Dyke topic. Well, Kevin, you're in a new movie called Colwell,
yes.
And they're screening it all week at Facets, and you're going to be there tonight after the 7 p.m. screening and tomorrow after the 5 and 7 p.m. screening for Q&A's. It stars
right.
Karen Allen. Tell everybody about Colwell.
Colwell was a script I got a year and a half ago. I can't remember. And it is, without getting into it, it's basically about Karen Allen's character, who is being, she's being forced to retire. She's a postmaster at the post office that she is in charge of is connected to her home. Her character doesn't drive.
Mm.
And there are some of these things in these small towns where literally someone's, I don't know, maybe not their garage, but with her, it was like the rec room or the family room is a mini post office. And this is where all the people from the town, a lot of older people, maybe a young woman with her child, you know, who's on maternity leave, all these in this small town in Pennsylvania, they all hang around there, and it's her life, and she loves it. And it's about, these post office, which I guess is really happening, becoming redundant because of the internet or all these other sources. And they're going to close hers. And it's her sort of fight and to keep her post office open and her main reason for her getting up in the morning is this post office and the people that hang around it. So,
and what do you play?
I play I'm sort of the person she opens up to a little bit more than the others. I'm a fellow post office worker, and I bring her mail to her every morning because, like I said, she doesn't drive.
Right.
So we have these little conversations, and you sort of see me come in and out sporadically through the film. It's a really nice, it's not a really big role, but it's a kind of role I really like.
Yeah.
And he's just a sort of nice, quiet guy.
Yeah.
It's not crazy or eccentric. He's just sort of this simple, nice guy.
Yeah. So what was it like working with Karen Allen? Because she doesn't get a lot of lead roles like this. And I love Karen Allen. I just think she's terrific.
So do I. I've always loved her. And she, it was great. She is so down to earth and completely not Hollywood and lives, I think, in Woodstock or somewhere. And, in a house that's some old house from the 1800s or something, you know, that she redid. And she's just really, really down to earth, quiet, nice person.
Yeah, and you know, I fell in love with her. You know, when I fell in love when I saw Animal House, I was like 13
sure.
when I saw Animal House, and that was it. And then, you know, it just kept getting more and more. I fell in love with her more and more. I mean, Starman and Shoot the Moon. She's done, and Raiders. I mean, come on, she's Marion, you know, in Raiders.
Nick, you would love her because she loves to talk about those films. She's not dismissive about any of those. She really, really loved, because I love that Phil Kaufman film, The Wanderers.
Oh yeah,
that she was in. Remember that?
Yeah, absolutely.
Sort of underrated. Everyone was in love with Warriors. I said, no, you have to see this film, The Wanderers.
It was weird because they both came out at the same time. I remember they both came
totally
out at the same time.
They totally did.
Yeah.
And And she, you know, loves to talk, because there was some anniversary when I brought it up to her. She, oh, I just did an anniversary of that film, you know, where they went to some film fest. Yeah, but she's really great.
That's great.
She's really great in this movie. And she has a Independent Spirit Award nomination, which was totally shocking, because I talked to the director, Tom Quinn, who's great.
Yeah.
And this film was so under the radar that when that came out, I think it really surprised everybody.
Yeah.
That it got a nomination for her and this John Cassavetes Award for films made under $500,000.
Oh, good. It's going to get some great recognition then. That's awesome.
Amazing.
So you're going to be at Facets tonight at 7 o'clock and tomorrow at 5 p.m. and 7 p.m. for those screenings doing a Q&A. Do you like talking to audiences about movies?
Yes and no. I'm very nervous about it. Mm. But there are certain parts of the film, and when you see it, you'll kind of understand that I don't feel comfortable talking about, because I'm not really involved with us. So I wish the director was there with me.
Mm.
But other than that, it's fine. Yeah.
Yeah. So you that'll be happening. So if people want to come see this movie and then have a little Q&A with you afterwards, tonight at 7 o'clock at Facets and tomorrow at 5 p.m. and 7 p.m. screenings. And then it runs.
It'll be fun.
Yeah, I'm sure it will. And it runs all the way through the 19th of December. And you can go to facets.org for all the information and all that cool stuff. What are you working on now, Kevin? Anything?
I'm not working on anything now, but after the new year. Mm-hmm. I'm waiting on something. I wanted to tell you, I went to Italy to do Catch 22.
Yes, yeah, the TV series, yeah.
For Hulu.
Right.
And I just, if you could get some footage of me going to Sardinia,
uh-huh.
being picked up by the driver who didn't speak any English. And as my Irish cousin said, who had been to Sardinia, I said, what's it like? And she said, rocks and water. And so I was there for 9 weeks.
Wow.
Completely panicked until I got to Rome. So
wow. 9 weeks. Man, oh, man. And so was that? Now, see, was there a language barrier, it sounds like, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
You know, I like to be in big cities. I'm just more comfortable.
I gotcha.
It's beautiful. But,
yeah.
For me, it was a little panicky.
Okay. All right, Kevin. Yes. Kevin, thank you very much for joining us. We got to get together sometime, okay?
Absolutely. Okay. And I missed you at the Rich's. I looked for you at the 40th anniversary.
Yeah.
But I think you were doing the show.
I couldn't do it. Yeah, I couldn't be there. But I'm glad you were there, Kevin. It's always a pleasure. We'll talk again soon, okay?
Thanks. Good talking to you.
Take care, man. Kevin J. O'Connor, he's awesome. Cole Wells, the name of the movie. Go to Facets and see it. And you can see a Q&A with him tonight and tomorrow. All right, we'll break. News is up next. Right, welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Skyline Studio, 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago, and we are here until 4 a.m. It's Friday, so that means all the regular Friday features are coming up. We got Straight Out of Context. That's when you listen to this radio station 24/7. You should anyway, because it's the best radio station ever. So you listen 24/7. Whenever anybody says something that you can pull out of context and it sounds a little dirty and it makes you giggle like a 9-year-old, you jot down the day, the time, who said it, and send it to nickdshow@gmail.com. Same goes for Nick D Show Spies. That's when you listen to this station 24/7. Whenever anybody mentions me in any capacity, we want to know about it. Jot down the day, the time, who said it, and send it to nickdshow@gmail.com. We also have You Big Dummy. You Big Dummy is when we read some real news stories about some real dumb people doing some real dumb stuff. We vote on who's the biggest dummy. Tom votes, I vote, and the first person through it, 312-981-7200, is our third vote. And, of course, we have Fly Jams Friday. All coming up right here on 720 WGN. Luscious Hushes will play the funk. That'll be a little bit later on if you want to get your requests, and you can. 312-981-7200. Okay. So, it's Dick Van Dyke's birthday today, 94 years old, and I should say 94 years young, considering how agile and crazy he still is. And if you saw that Mary Poppins sequel last year and the dance number that he did, you're like, how is this guy in his 90s? How is that even possible? I'm 54 and I can barely move. I mean, so... But anyway, he's 94. And so, Tom, did you ever watch the Dick Van Dyke Show, like when you were a kid or anything?
I more came to him through the movies. I mean, specifically Mary Poppins, and he was Chitty Chitty Bang Bang.
Chitty Chitty Bang Bang, yeah.
So I always loved him. He was just a lovable, bright on-screen presence that just made you feel good.
Yeah.
And I didn't get to watch the Dick Van Dyke Show until a lot later. We were more of an Andy Griffith household.
Yeah.
But they had it on Netflix. I think they still do. And I just started watching a ton of it. And
Did you?
I was like really endeared by it. I think it's an incredibly well-written and smart show. And I was like, this is the golden era of TV right here.
It is. Now, did you know him from the Night at the Museum movies?
Well, that was, I knew who he was by the time those came out.
Yeah, okay.
When those came out, I was like, oh, cool.
Yeah.
It's Dick Van Dyke.
Yeah.
And I knew he was a really spry and funny guy.
Fun to see him in those movies. But yeah, when I was a kid, particularly Chitty Chitty Bang Bang, I liked Mary Poppins very much, but it was Chitty Chitty Bang Bang that I really was like, man, I love this guy. And I loved his show. I love the Dick Van Dyke Show. It's one of the greatest sitcoms in the history. And Carl Reiner, you know, you can't go wrong with Mary Tyler Moore. But yeah, so he's 94. If you guys want to jump in, what are your favorite Dick Van Dyke memories, your favorite Dick Van Dyke show episodes? And Rosemarie, Maury Amsterdam, Richard Deacon. I mean, come on. That's like legendary television. And it's still funny. You watch that show today, and it's still really, really funny. But what do you guys want to talk about with Dick Van Dyke? Let's do a little bio here. On December 13th, 1925, Dick Van Dyke, the quintessential nice guy actor who would become known for his performances in such movie classics as Mary Poppins and Chitty Chitty Bang Bang, as well as the popular 1960s TV sitcom The Dick Van Dyke Show, was born in West Plains, Missouri. Van Dyke, who was raised in Danville, Illinois, as we all know, he's got a great connection here to Illinois. Served in the military during World War II and in the 50s took various acting jobs and hosted a series of TV game shows. In 1960, by the way, Dick Van Dyke appeared on a lot of panel shows. You know, the old great, you know, you can see him on Game Show Network. You can see him on Buzzer. The old panel shows, you know, like To Tell the Truth and What's My Line and all of those really great ones. And he was really wonderful on that, too. Anyway, in 1960, he starred on Broadway in Bye Bye Birdie, a role which earned him a Tony Award. The following year, he signed on to play comedy writer Rob Petrie on The Dick Van Dyke Show. The show was the brainchild of the writer, director, producer Carl Reiner, who reportedly based the sitcom on his own experiences working as a comedy writer for Sid Caesar. The Dick Van Dyke Show featured a strong ensemble cast, including Mary Tyler Moore as Rob's wife, Laura, Maury Amsterdam as Rose, and Rosemarie as Rob's colleagues, Buddy and Sally. Larry Matthews is the Petrie's son, Richie. And in the show's opening credits, Van Dyke would famously be seen tripping over an ottoman in the family's home in New Rochelle, New York, where, in keeping with the conservative broadcasting standards of the time, Rob and Laura Petrie slept in separate beds. After the Dick Van Dyke Show went off the air in 1966, Mary Tyler Moore starred in her own successful TV sitcom, The Mary Tyler Moore Show, which originally aired from 1970 to 77. Another amazing show, The Mary Tyler Moore Show. Just brilliant and funny and smart and a great cast. In addition to his TV successes in the 1960s, Van Dyke appeared in a string of movies, including the 1963 big screen adaptation of Bye Bye Birdie, which co-starred Anne Margaret and Janet Leigh. The following year, he appeared as the charming chimney sweep Bert in Walt Disney's movie musical Mary Poppins, which featured Julie Andrews in her feature film debut as the umbrella-toting super nanny. The film, now a beloved cinematic classic, earned 13 Academy Award nominations and took 5 Oscars, including Best Actress for Andrews. Though Van Dyke received positive reviews for his singing and dancing, critics skewered him for his bad English accent. In 1968, Van Dyke had another hit movie musical with Chitty Chitty Bang Bang, in which he played the eccentric inventor Caracactus Potts, who develops the magic car. The film's screenplay was co-written by Roald Dahl, the best-selling author of Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. From 1971 to 74, Van Dyke starred in The New Dick Van Dyke Show, playing a Phoenix TV show host. The actor, who in the 70s went public about his struggle with alcoholism, was featured in a series of made-for-TV movies and did guest appearances on various TV shows before he was cast in another successful series, the medical crime drama Diagnosis Murder. The show, which originally aired from 1993 to 2001, now that's a long run, also featured Van Dyke's son, Barry Van Dyke. After a half century in show business, Van Dyke continues to act. Among his most recent credits include Curious George, Night at the Museum, Night at the Museum, Secret of the Tomb, and Mary Poppins Returns. 94 years old today, the great Dick Van Dyke. We're going to go through some of the great Dick Van Dyke episodes of the Dick Van Dyke Show and talk about his film career, too. And if you guys want to share your memories and stuff that you love about Dick Van Dyke, your favorite roles, your favorite episodes, that kind of stuff, 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. Here's Taxi Driver Bob. Hi, Bob.
Hey. I have to say that I'm 59, so Chitty Chitty Bang Bang was, you know, at the same time, The Sound of Music and all that. It was kind of a magical time for movies as a kid to be going to. And I always, me driving the cab around, I wish I had a flying car.
Sure, sure.
Yeah, get a lot of cab rides that way. But, I mean, it's kind of remarkable. I mean, from my understanding, the guy was a big time alcoholic.
Oh, no question.
Alcoholic.
No question, I mean, about it. He fully, you know, look, he's admitted it. He's talked about it, in, you know, and talked about the struggles that he had for years with alcoholism. And he was a big time alcoholic. No question about it.
How could he? I mean, I don't know how a guy could remember lines like that and function like that. I mean, you couldn't tell he was drunk.
Yeah. Well, trust me, Bob, you can do it. Trust me, you can. It's not good. It's not good at all. It's bad, and it's an illness, but you can do it. So
yeah. You have a good night.
Okay, thank you, Bob.
Thank
you. He talks about his struggles with that. It became a big, you know, I mean, he was very, very honest about it and open about it, and he, you know, he helped other people. It became a thing for him that he wanted to help others who were struggling with this disease and struggling with alcoholism. It's become part of, you know, what makes Dick Van Dyke Dick Van Dyke, that he's survived through that. 94 years old, man. Okay, we'll take a break. When we come back, I want to hear from you guys. What are your favorite Dick Van Dyke episodes, your favorite Dick Van Dyke roles? We'll go through his movies, and we're going to go through some of the classic episodes of the Dick Van Dyke Show.
Jim, Jiminy, Jim, Jim, Cheree, a sweep is as lucky can be. Jim, Jiminy, Jim, Jiminy, Jim, Jim, Chiroo. Good luck, we're above when I shake hands with you. Or blow me a kiss. And that's lucky, too.
Oh, Dick Van Dyke. It's like my childhood just came back to me, came flying back to me. Welcome back, everybody. It's Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, here till 4 a.m. as we are every weekday morning. It's Friday. That means Fly Jams Friday, Straight Out of Context, Nick D Show Spies, You Big Dummy, and, of course, Vic's Picks as he continues his musical education journey. Actually listening to albums from the best albums from the 21st century. So we'll get him in here to talk about that at 2:30. Phone number is 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200 for talk and text. And we would love to hear from you because we're talking about Dick Van Dyke. Dick Van Dyke turns 94 today and still active and still working, and created one of the, you know, along with Carl Reiner, created one of the most iconic, one of the best sitcoms ever. And we're going to talk about some of those great classic episodes and some of his movie roles. And I want to recommend a few myself that some people may not have seen. A terrific actor and a wonderful guy. 312-981-7200 for talk and text. We got some text that came in. 217 area code says, favorite Dick Van Dyke episode, Walnuts. And they open the closet door, and there's the beautiful Mary Tyler Moore in her capri pants. On a pile, and the walnuts just pour out of the bottom. 708 area code, when Rob believed that the wrong baby was sent home from the hospital with him and Laura. That is one of my favorite episodes. He used ink to take a footprint of Little Richie's footprint to prove he was right. That's a great episode. 847 area code, my favorite show was when the whole group went to a haunted hotel and one by one disappeared. So, what's a Dick Van Dyke was the punchline for an anecdote Rosemarie liked to tell when she was offered the role of the Dick Van Dyke Show. Short answer, he's a national treasure. He's 94 years old now. The game-changing sitcom created by Carl Reiner ran from 61 to 66. It was based on Reiner's experiences as a suburban family man who wrote for Sid Caesar's variety shows, Your Show of Shows and Caesar's Hour. You know, that working for Sid Caesar has inspired a lot of material.
Well, yeah.
Because... I mean,
Mel Brooks, right?
Mel Brooks, Laughter on the 23rd Floor, the Neil Simon movie, is based on being in that room writing for Sid Caesar. My Favorite Year, the film with Peter O'Toole. Have you seen that movie, My Favorite Year, with Peter O'Toole and Mark Lynn Baker?
Yes, a long time ago.
And the lovely Jessica Harper.
Yes.
From Suspiria.
Yeah, very long time ago.
It is a great movie, and it was about, I mean, obviously, you know, he played like an Errol Flynn type actor who was also, you know, an alcoholic, and he was booked to do this TV show, this live comedy sketch show, and they were worried about him. So they hire Mark Lynn Baker, who was a writer on the staff, to like stay with Peter O'Toole. To Peter O'Toole's character, to make sure he doesn't get soused and show up, you know, to make sure, stay with him for a couple of days, and, you know, make sure he shows up for rehearsals, make sure he's not drunk, keep him away from the bottle. That was the big thing. And it's a lovely movie. Richard Benjamin directed it. And it's a really lovely movie with a great performance by Peter O'Toole. Well, anyway, Joseph Bologna's in it, and he plays the guy who runs the show, totally based on Sid Caesar, like completely based on Sid Caesar. And if you've ever watched your show of shows, the show was brilliant, and it had a writing staff that you can't believe some of the writers that were on that show. Like, that writer's room had to be just like insane.
It's so crazy, because I feel like during that time in TV, when it was such in its infancy,
yeah,
and becoming the new mode of how people got their entertainment, people would just seem to congregate in single rooms because there were so few shows to be on. So you would just get your pick of the litter.
Well, it was appointment TV.
You know what I mean?
Back in those days. And even when I was a kid in the 70s, we only had three networks. We only had three channels and a UHF. And so whatever was on, and I've said this before, if it was on and you missed it, you got to wait another year. Like if they showed like Gone with the Wind on TV or something, that's it. You're done if you missed it. It's not on for another year. And so like, reruns would come by in the summer. But, you know, this was before DVRs and VCRs and all that stuff. But yeah, back in that, it's such classic television, your show of shows, and such a great cast. And Imogene Coca, who was one of the funniest women that's ever lived. People, if you don't know who Imogene Coca is, if you're too young to know who she is, for a point of reference, she played Aunt Edna in National Lampoon's Vacation. That's Imogene Coca for the younger folk who are listening. But she and Sid Caesar were legendary on your show of shows. It was just an amazing show, and Sid Caesar was just a powerhouse. So yeah. But anyway, it is amazing that writer's room has spawned so many really great pieces of entertainment, including the Dick Van Dyke Show. So Van Dyke starred as Rob Petrie, the head writer for the Alan Brady Show, juggling the demands of his glamorous showbiz career with his often harried home life. Reiner was originally slated to star as his own alter ego. The pilot, entitled Head of the Family, was rejected by the network, but producer Sheldon Leonard saw gold in the season's worth of scripts that Reiner had written and went to bat for the show, telling Reiner, "We'll get a better actor to play you." Sheldon Leonard, by the way, legendary television producer. You've seen him on screen, too. He's got a very distinctive voice, Sheldon Leonard. In fact, they just showed a rerun of the three-part Sanford and Son episode that he's on, that Sheldon Leonard is on with Greg Morris. It's called The Hawaiian Connection. And he plays like sort of the head crime boss.
Yeah.
And they're going to they stick a bunch of stolen diamonds in the suitcase that Fred's going to bring with him.
and he just does have that voice.
He's got this, he smokes cigars and he's got that voice, you know.
Diamonds in the bag.
Yeah, put the diamonds in the bag. And then, I can't remember who the female was in that, because it was Greg Morris and it was Sheldon Leonard and I can't remember the actress. Maybe you can look it up. If you look up The Hawaiian Connection, Sanford and Son, look up the cast, because she was really, she's very attractive, very hot 70s woman. And she also appeared on, she was a semi-regular on Match Game in the 70s Match Game, and I can't remember her name. But so it was those three, and they set Fred up with a bunch of stolen diamonds that he's supposed to bring back to L.A. So, because he's there for a junk man's convention in Hawaii. He was like guest of honor at a junk man's convention. So he and Lamont fly out to Hawaii. Little do they know that Greg Morris, Sheldon Leonard, and whoever the female is, who I can't remember right now. Have you looked it up?
Yeah, do you remember what her character's name
I do
was?
Not.
Was it Barbara Rhodes?
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah, Barbara Rhodes.
That's it. Barbara Rhodes. That's it.
She plays Gladys.
Gladys. So, Anyway, he was slated to star as his own alter ego. Enter Dick Van Dyke, a Tony Award-winning Broadway star who looked like a romantic leading man that had the soul and the physical dexterity of a silent movie-era clown. Van Dyke was supported by one of TV's great ensembles at work. Vaudevillians Rose Marie and Maury Amsterdam were comedy writers Sally Rogers and Bud Sorrell. Richard Deacon was the put-upon brother-in-law producer Mel Cooley, and Carl Reiner was Alan Brady. At home, Larry Matthews was Rob's son, and Mary Tyler Moore first turning on the world with her scandalous capri pants. Wait a minute, they were scandalous? I mean, I know she's legendary for making the capri pants popular. Does anybody remember where they were?
You could see her ankles.
Those were different times, man.
Well, it's always weird to think about, like, they were married on TV and they slept in separate beds.
Yeah.
Like, that was such a strange thing.
It was the time period, though. That was the time period.
I know. Whoever would have thought that would be controversial? They're married.
Yeah. I mean, the Flintstones slept in separate beds, too. Jerry Paris and Anne Morgan Gilbert starred as best friends and neighbors, Jerry and Millie. The Dick Van Dyke Show was made for its times, JFK's New Frontier. It was a youthful, smart, sophisticated, and silly workplace comedy and a family sitcom where the parents are way more interesting than the child. Decades before Seinfeld, it explored from where creators of comedy mined their material. The winner of 15 Emmy Awards, including 3 for Van Dyke, The Dick Van Dyke Show is endlessly watchable and quotable. In the words of Big Max Calvada, it's neither too esoteric or too mundane. Pragmatically speaking, it hits me right in the gut. So we've got some here. I've got like the 50 best episodes. And I'm looking at what I'm just going to go right to number one and take a look at what it is. Okay. All right. I'm looking at it. What do you guys think? What are some of your favorite Dick Van Dyke Show episodes? And what are some of your favorite Dick Van Dyke movies or memories or performances? 312-981-7200. All right. How about this one? Stacy Petrie. Jerry Van Dyke is seen to better advantage in the second go-around as Rob's awkward, tongue-tied brother, who is poised to open a new cellar coffee house and propose to a woman he's never met who thinks he's James Garner, the drummer, not the actor. This is one of those classic nobody-knows-how-I-feel exchange. How about Laura's Little Lie and Very Old Shoes, Very Old Rice? Moore delivers some of her best, oh, Rob's, in the first and better part of this two-parter. That's when Rob discovers that she lied about her age on their insurance. Oh, God, I remember this one. She lied about her age on her insurance policy, and they may not be legally married. The second part more predictably trumps up a fight between the couple when they need to get remarried. Happily, the great Madge Blake, Aunt Harriet on Batman, and Burt Mustin are on hand as elderly witnesses to offer advice on the couple to the couple. By the way, you know, Tom, I don't know. You know, you watch some old TV, right?
Yeah.
You ever watched the the fantastic Johnny Carson shows that are on Antenna TV?
Oh yeah,
weeknights at 9.
I usually, when our show was a little bit later, yeah, I'd watch it before I'd come to work.
And it's great. You can watch it on Antenna TV. It's fantastic. The Johnny Carson show. It's those old Johnny Carson reruns. I could watch them endlessly on a loop.
They make me weep with laughter.
They do the 1 hours. They do the 1 hours during the week, but then they do the 90-minute shows on the weekend on Antenna TV. So you get to see the full 90-minute shows. It's fantastic. Well, you know, they mentioned this actor Burt Mustin. So if you look him up, if you do like it's B-E-R-T, Burt Mustin, M-U-S-T-I-N. This guy was always old. He was one of those guys that even, you know, this is in the 60s when he was on this show and he played an old man. And he was one of the most memorable guests on Johnny Carson's show in the 70s. And if you look at him, if you see the guy's face, you go, oh, that guy. He's like the quintessential old guy who has appeared on 9,000 TV shows and was a fantastic guest on Johnny Carson. And I know as you peruse through, you know, the listings on Antenna TV of the Johnny Carson show, which is just a national treasure that I'm so glad that Antenna TV shows it. And if you look at some of the guest lists, whenever you see Burt Mustin listed as a guest on the Johnny Carson reruns on Antenna TV, tune in. I'm telling you, tune in. Now, you see the guy? You recognize him, right?
Of course I recognize him.
I mean, he's the old guy. You know what I mean? And he was always old, which is fantastic. I think he lived to into a real older old age. But Bert Mustin appears on this episode. So, hey, we're talking Dick Van Dyke, Dick Van Dyke Show. What are your favorite episodes? We're jumping into that. And it's Dick Van Dyke's 94th birthday. So if you want to jump in with any of your memories and your favorite Dick Van Dyke stuff, 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. More after this. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. A legend is celebrating his 94th birthday today, and that's Dick Van Dyke. So we're going to talk about some of the greatest episodes of the TV show, The Dick Van Dyke Show. And he made some great movies, too. He appeared in some memorable movies, a few of which I'd like to recommend for people who may not have seen them. And we want to hear from you guys. What are your favorite episodes? What are your favorite Dick Van Dyke moments celebrating his 94th birthday? 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. Before the break, in the article that I'm reading from here, where they're talking about the best episodes of The Dick Van Dyke Show, they just mentioned an episode that starred character actor Bert Mustin. And if you're near a computer and you Google B-U-R-T Mustin, you'll recognize this man's face immediately. He played an old man in everything. And he was a fantastic guest on The Tonight Show, on Johnny Carson. And like I said, scan your schedules on Antenna TV, because Antenna TV beautifully shows those old Johnny Carson shows, which are just fantastic to watch. Every weeknight at 9, and then on the weekends, they show the full 90-minute, the old 90-minute episodes. Bert Mustin was a regular on Johnny Carson and was always gold. I think we have just a little audio of the great Bert Mustin on Johnny Carson.
Did you ever hear of a song called Tessie? I don't suppose so.
Tessie?
Well, that was it.
How's it go? Can you remember?
Tessie, you make me feel so badly. Why don't you turn around? Tessie, you know I love you madly. My heart is on the ground. Now, can you imagine anything less likely to... The story was that they had played it up there with the band for some of their final games, and they thought it was a good theme song, a fetish.
And they just kept it.
They kept it, and when the series, they came to Pittsburgh. We took the first two games. Then they went back to Boston. We split even there, and that made it 3-1 Pittsburgh. Then they came to Pittsburgh, and we never won another game. And they played that Tessie thing every inning. And in Pittsburgh, for 10 years after that, the song Tessie was outlawed. You weren't allowed to play it in the city limits.
1903.
Amazing. That guy, I mean, seriously, he was one of the most memorable guests in the history of The Tonight Show. And the Johnny Carson reruns are on Antenna TV, and I can't recommend them highly enough, especially if you see the name Bert Mustin. Always one of the greatest guests. All right, let's see. Got some people on the line here. We're talking about Dick Van Dyke. 312-981-7200 is the phone number if you would like to join us. Here's Lulu on WGN. Go ahead, Lulu.
Hey, I don't know if it's one of the most popular, but the Schuster episode where Rob and Maury invest in his uncle's shoe store.
Oh, okay.
And they piss off the salesman and he leaves. So Rob has to wait on this really sexy buxom blonde.
Oh, yeah. I remember that. Now I remember.
And he is stumbling and fumbling. And he sits down on the stool and it had a ramp on it because you could put your foot up there so they could put your feet on.
Yeah.
He slides right off of it.
Yeah. I mean, you know what, Lulu? This brings up the fact that we've talked about it briefly here, but man, physically, Dick Van Dyke was unbelievable. Like the physical comedy that he could do. And it was great too because he's tall and he's really lanky. So when he does, when he does all that physical stuff with his arms and legs, it's even funnier. And it's brilliant stuff.
Yeah. That was a great one. I love that. I just watched it not too long ago.
Yeah. It's great. All right, Lulu, thank you.
Okay. Bye.
We got some texts that have come in, too. A bunch of texts. People love Dick Van Dyke. Happy 94th. 779 area code says, my distant cousin Sally Ann Howes starred opposite Dick Van Dyke in Chitty Chitty Bang Bang, and he's a great actor. Thanks for the tribute to him. Wow, that's nice. Starring an opposite. You're in Chitty Chitty Bang Bang? Sally Ann Howes is your distant cousin. Chitty Chitty Bang Bang got to act with Dick Van Dyke. 224 area code says, favorite Dick Van Dyke show was the one where he thought he saw or heard a UFO, but it ended up being the sound of from a water cooler. He was also in a Columbo episode that I forgot that I really liked, but I forget the name right now. So Dick Van Dyke appeared on a Columbo episode. Yeah, he did a lot of episodic TV. Hey, you know, here's one for you, Tom.
Hit me.
You know some of those legendary moments where Tim Conway breaks up Harvey Korman or breaks up the cast?
Oh, no doubt.
Yeah. On the Carol Burnett show?
Oh, yeah.
Well, Dick Van Dyke is in perhaps the most classic let's find the audio on it. It's you can just type in Carol Burnett show, Tim Conway, elephant. They were doing an episode of like the mama, you know, mama, you know, the mama's family episode. And it is one of the most classic Tim Conway moments ever that leads to Vicki Lawrence saying something on the air that has, because everybody's like, Dick Van Dyke is in it. He's in this episode with them. He doesn't get a word in edgewise because Tim Conway just goes off on this weird rant and breaks everybody up. Dick Van Dyke is losing it. Vicki Lawrence, not so much. Carol Burnett losing it. And Tim Conway won't stop. And so finally, when he does stop, the punchline is Vicki Lawrence saying something, and Dick Van Dyke literally falls off the couch laughing. So he's part of one of the most classic moments in the history of the Carol Burnett show, and there's Dick Van Dyke right there. So we have a little bit of it. Did you find it?
Well, I will play the whole thing. I have to do a little bit of bleeping.
Oh, it's uncensored?
Yes.
It is? Wait a minute. At the very end, because it's Vicki Lawrence says something at the very end that we can't say on the air?
Yes.
And it's uncensored?
They have it uncensored.
Wow. Okay. Well, just put one beep in. All you got to do is put one beep in. We'll listen to that in a little bit. Let's get back to the phones here. We're talking about Dick Van Dyke. Here's Carrie on WGN. Hi, Carrie.
Hey, morning, Nick.
Hi.
Hey, Bert Moss and I, he was just on a Brady Bunch episode on MeTV.
Of course he was.
Of course he was. That was the Jesse James one.
Right.
He played the old guy who, yeah.
Yeah.
But he was in everything.
He's a legend. Legend.
Yeah, he was. So I'm sure it's on the list. Everybody's favorite is, it's not mine. Well, it's a good one, but not mine. Is one where Laura gets her toe stuck in the faucet.
Yeah.
And speaking, and the reason I thought about that is talking about how risque the, you know, if they were slept together. But that, I guess at the time that was pretty risque because, you know, she was in the tub and,
yeah,
you know, you could see her foot and like part of her, you
part
know,
of her thigh. Yeah, 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 exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
Right. So, but my two favorite for some reason are two weird ones. The one with Danny Thomas, where I think Rob has a dream, and he believes that they're all aliens.
Oh, yeah,
and
yeah.
The closet full of walnuts.
Yeah, that's the walnuts episode, yeah, yeah.
And they have eyes in the back of their heads.
Yeah.
He's just freaking, and Danny Thomas is in it for some reason.
Yeah.
I don't really remember. I remember that one. And the other one is weird, too, where Alan Brady tricks them. He's filming them, and he tricks them that they have to go to this remote place to do some retreat, and they bring their significant others. And he convinces them that they're haunted, and they're all going to get killed. And
yeah,
Mel disappears. That's a really weird one, but I like the weird
one.
Yeah,
someone texted that one in as being their favorite. Yeah,
yeah. And then one other trivia thing for me, you know, I call you mostly, but I chime in on some other shows every now and then. But I've only been hung up once on WGN,
mm-hmm,
and I've never been profane. I'm always a good caller.
Yeah.
There was a previous host, maybe in your time slot, won't name any names. It wasn't Bill. And, the topic was, underrated TV shows. And I called in and said, well, Dick Van Dyke, that should be on, instead of Friends 24 hours a day, Dick Van Dyke should be on 24 hours a day. And the host, said, Dick Van Dyke, what are you talking about? Dick Van Dyke show. I'm like, huh? I'm like, you know, the cast, blah, blah, blah. You know, he's married Tyler Moore. It's like, oh, you're thinking about the Mary Tyler Moore show.
Wait. Are you telling me that there was a host on WGN,
yes,
who did not know what the Dick Van Dyke show was?
Yes, yes. And probably older than me.
I can't.
And you. It wasn't that, well, now it was, because you've been on a while. And
yeah.
Before Bill. I won't name names.
Yeah.
But I started to get, you know, kind of worked up. I'm like, you don't know the Dick Van Dyke Show? He was married to Tyler Moore. And I said, oh, you talk about the Baron Tyler Moore Show. Dick Van Dyke was on that show. And I wasn't mad, but I couldn't believe it. So I was kind of getting agitated. So I got hung up on. And then the host said, won't name a gender. The host said, I don't know what that guy's been smoking, but he's got his shows mixed up. I'm like, what?
Wow. Okay. All right.
So that was my only time in trouble on WGN. Right.
Okay. Thanks, Kerry. Right. Take care.
Thanks,
I cannot believe that someone.
Now I want to guess who it is.
I think I know who it is. I think I know who it is. I think I do.
Why would Bob Surratt say something so hurtful?
No, I'm pretty sure I know who it is. How do you not know the Dick Van Dyke Show? Seriously.
Yeah, I'm basically a baby, and I know what the Dick Van Dyke Show is.
Of course you do, because it's one of the most legendary television shows of all time.
You know how I only knew what it was? It was because of a Family Guy joke.
Of course. Of course. That's the other thing.
Where they censor the first two, the first part of his name and the last part of his name.
It's funny because, you know, Esmeralda, when Esmeralda Leon was part of the show, and we would, like, throw out these sort of maybe obscure shows or TV things or something like that, and she would go, oh! I know that from The Simpsons. So, like, you know, like that would be how would she get the pop culture references. She didn't really know the actual reference itself, like, or the TV show itself, but she knew it from The Simpsons. So, let me fly through some texts here. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we do have the audio of Tim Conway doing one of the greatest. And then, did you censor it?
I did. Yes.
Okay. All right.
For the children.
All right. We'll come back after I fly through some of these texts. I can still see Rob practicing putting on his hat and going to bed fully dressed in case Laura goes into labor overnight. Classic. Mary Tyler Moore was the first woman to wear pants on TV. Oh, okay. All right. I enjoyed Dick Van Dyke and the low gore mystery Diagnosis. I like Columbo and Father Dowling mysteries. Dick Van Dyke was seriously considered for the role of James Bond until his British accent didn't make the cut. As always, great show. Van Dyke and Gene Hackman both grew up in Danville, Illinois. I love Dick Van Dyke on the Carol Burnett Show. That's what we're gonna play a little piece of that. Three episodes come to mind from the 847 area code. Dick Van Dyke was when Laura told the world Alan Brady wore a toupee, the dream about the walnuts, and when Millie came over at night to stay because she was alone, they stayed up all night doing crazy things because they were scared. One of the funniest Dick Van Dyke episodes was a flashback when they got married, how Rob goes to the wedding sick and can't hear and can't talk and says, I do, many times. That's Canadian Bill. And then 773 says the Bob kiss with Greg Morris and Ian Fleming was the original writer of Chitty Chitty Bang Bang. That is correct. All right, let's take a break, and we'll come back and hear some of that audio from that classic Carol Burnett moment that Dick Van Dyke was a part of. And we'll talk more Dick Van Dyke. Everybody call in and text.
Pick out a pleasant outlook. Stick out that noble chin. Wipe off the full of doubt look. Slap on a happy grin. And spread sunshine all over the place. Just put on a happy
There
face.
He is. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here, live in the Skyline studio. Dick Van Dyke's 94 today, so we're celebrating that, talking about the great episodes of the TV show, and I'm going to tell you about some of the movies that you should probably check out because he's so good. He's a national treasure, and happy 94th to him. Coming up, we got our regular features starting at 2:30 with Vic's Picks, and also the news is next from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom here on WGN. Okay, so before the break, I was telling you about the Dick Van Dyke is also part of one of the most classic moments in the history of the Carol Burnett Show. They were doing one of the Mama's Family sketches, he was the guest on the show. And Tim Conway, who was wont to stray and improvise and maybe mostly want to break Harvey Keitel. Harvey Korman wants to break Harvey Korman. There were classic moments that we all know. One of the most classics was during this, and Dick Van Dyke was a guest on it. And I mean, he's not going to say anything because it's all Tim Conway. But this is one of the greatest moments, one of the funniest moments in Carol Burnett history. So here,
Tom felt sorry for him. He couldn't go lock the elevator opens when they go. All they could do is just blow and go
north.
These the other's eyes get real big.
Oh,
So now, because this, we didn't hear the whole thing because he literally went on for like 3 minutes where he improvised about two elephants that had their trunks together. And when she said that, she's like, "Are you sure that little blank is done?" Dick Van Dyke off the couch, just fell off the couch laughing. It's one of the classic moments in Carol Burnett history, and there was Dick Van Dyke. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Here's Donna on WGN. Hi, Donna.
Hi. Good evening, Nick.
Hi.
My favorite episode is when Laura is snooping in the mail, and Robin's sending her a package, and she opens it, and it's the big rat that comes out of it.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a classic one.
I love that one.
Yeah, it's such a good show. It is such a good show, man. So
it never gets old.
Never. Absolutely. It's one of those timeless shows. Absolutely. All right, Donna, thank you.
Thank you.
Take care. Is Dick Van Dyke on? Is it broadcast on? Do we know what?
I'll have to check real quick. But okay. I know if you're a streaming household, which many people are, you can watch the entire series on Netflix. That's how I watch it.
Okay. It's all on Netflix if you want to check it out, Dick Van Dyke. Here is Tyrone on WGN. Hi, Tyrone.
Good morning, Nick.
Morning.
Well, before I tell you my favorite episode, I always felt that if they ever needed someone to fill in for Dick Van Dyke, you know, as Rob Petrie, I always felt Robert Culp back in them days could have fit the bill.
Oh,
what do you
sure.
think?
Yeah, no, that makes sense. Yeah, that makes sense.
He was just like him as far as I was concerned.
Yeah. Yep.
Same voice, same laugh. My favorite episode was the one where Laura Petrie has to prevent him from being mugged, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And then everybody's given Dick Van Dyke the raspberries because he had to be defended against a mugger by a woman, you know.
Yeah.
So they're both home, you know, in the living room there, and Dick Van Dyke is giving her the most jealous look in the world, and he's looking at her, and he says to her, "How come you got to wear pants?" You know,
yeah.
I thought that was hilarious.
Yeah, yeah, that's a classic. That is a classic moment. All right, thanks, Tyrone. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Here's Steve on WGN. Hi, Steve.
Yeah, I think the name is Liberty Bell. But the premise was he had what he thought was freckles on his back that made the pattern of the Liberty Bell.
Oh, right.
But what was the name of that? There was a parody of Ripley's Believe It or Not, and I can't remember the name of the television show that he was.
Yeah, I don't
trying
remember.
To get on.
Yeah, I don't remember. I don't remember.
Yeah, and I remember part of the episode, too, was the tiny little hat for the guy that's the head the size of a baseball.
right. Yeah. I don't remember the name, though. But, yeah, that's a classic one, too. All right, Steve, thanks.
Okay. Thanks.
Take care. 312-981-7200. How about this? This episode, Rob literally trips over himself as the lone jury holdout enthralled to a ravishing defendant. Rob's faith in her innocence is justified, but he has a lot of explaining to do to Laura, who witnesses his antics in court. One of the key elements of this episode is that we learn Rob's middle name. Rob's middle name is Simpson. Rob Simpson Petrie. All right. How about this? It's a fun one here. It's fun to watch layman Rob Petrie play lawyer to an increasingly exasperated Ed Begley. That's Ed Begley Sr. As a small claims court judge hearing Rob's case against a suspect pillow salesman, Alvie Moore, Hank Kimball on Green Acres, has the episode's most famous line, "Your Honor, I'd like to enter a plea of insanity. He's crazy." How about this? Is Rob getting tired of Laura? She thinks so. Laura's crying jag at the end of the episode is a tantalizing hint of Moore's comic chops. And this is when Ann Morgan Gilbert makes her debut as neighbor and best friend, Millie Helper. That's when she puts on the blonde wig, if I remember correctly. Like, Rob doesn't like her anymore, so she puts on a blonde wig. You remember the episode of the Honeymooners? Oh, you're not a Honeymooners guy. There's an episode of the Honeymooners where they go and visit where Ralph and... And Ed bring, you know, Trixie and Alice to meet with this guy from work who's, you know, like pretty, you know, he's a rich guy and they want to make a good impression. And so he's got, well, they go and visit him at his house and he's got a really ditzy blonde wife. Well, wait, hold on. We got to take a break here for the news, but I want to mention, because this is one of the classic episodes. It's kind of similar to what we were talking about with what Laura Petrie did. It's Dick Van Dyke's birthday. He is 94 today, and we're celebrating that and talking more at 312-981-7200. News is next.
You, pretty chitty bang bang, chitty chitty bang bang, we love you. And in chitty chitty bang bang, chitty chitty bang bang, what we'll do near, far, in a motor car, oh, what a happy time we'll spend. Bang bang, chitty chitty bang bang.
All right. Wank, welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are here until 4 a.m. It's Friday. Starting at 2:30, all the regular Friday features begins with Vic's Picks. Then we've got You Big Dummy, Straight Out of Context, Nick D Show Spies. And, of course, we get funky on Friday, Fly Jams Friday. We also have an unfortunate Blackhawks Express that we're going to play back to later on. Our phone number is 312-981-7200. It's Dick Van Dyke's 94th birthday, so we're celebrating that. He's such a legend, and he's so awesome, and he's still kicking around and doing everything. He's got more energy than most people who are in their 30s. And just had a legendary sitcom, The Dick Van Dyke Show, and did a lot of great film work, too, and we're remembering all of that as we celebrate his birthday. Let's see. 804 area code says, I watch the elephant sketch at least once a month. That last word that Vicky has is a no-no. Yeah, that's why we had to beep it. The Carol Burnett Show. Dick Van Dyke did a movie called Never a Dull Moment with Edward G. Robinson, where he had a dual role as an actor and a gangster. Not shown very often, but it's pretty funny. That was the same year as Chitty Chitty Bang Bang. That was 1968, same year as Chitty Chitty Bang Bang. So 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Here's Jim on WGN. Hi, Jim.
Hi there. You know, when you're 87, you get up a lot during the night. You
I
know?
Understand. Yeah, I understand.
And that's one of my get-ups, and I put WGN on for a while, and there you were.
Yeah.
Well, I'm going to tell you, this last week, I think it was Wednesday, the Dick Van Dyke Show had the routine, where I am a fine musician. Remember that one?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, but in that same one, he did, with some heavy guy who I never saw before, he did Laurel and Hardy.
Right.
He was so good. That, I mean, he was as funny as the original.
Yeah, no question about it. He had so much talent, and I remember the Laurel Hardy bit. He was great.
Yeah. I think I've probably seen every single one of those programs over the years.
Yeah, no, it's classic. All right, Jim, thanks for getting up and listening.
Okay.
See ya.
You bet. Bye.
Right. And you're 87 years old. You get up in the middle of the night a lot. I understand. Now, some of the movies that he did. He did this really terrific movie that Kevin J. O'Connor, the actor that we were interviewing earlier, mentioned. It's a terrific movie called The Comic, where he does those classic old comic and vaudeville routines. And because Dick Van Dyke is so gifted physically, it's a really wonderful movie. Now, the first one that came to my mind when I was talking with Tom about this. He made a movie in 1971 that was, in fact, directed by Norman Lear. I don't know if it's the only movie that Norman Lear directed. But does anybody remember the movie Cold Turkey? 312-981-7200, text in or call or whatever. Cold Turkey is one of my favorites. I love that movie. My parents and I saw it a bunch of times. And he played a reverend as part of a town that's giving up smoking. Entirely, like they're going cold turkey, so everybody in the town is going to quit smoking, and they go nuts. So it's about this whole town desperately trying to quit smoking cold turkey, and they all go nuts. That was one of my favorite movies when I was a kid. I'm not really sure why, because the plot, a little, you know, for like a six, I was, what was I, six when the movie came out? So I saw it probably when I was 6 or 7 years old. Why would a six-year-old be fascinated by a movie about an entire town quitting smoking? Not really sure, except for the fact that as a kid, I loved Dick Van Dyke, so that probably had a lot to do with it. But it's a really funny movie. If you've never seen it, it's called Cold Turkey. He was in a serious movie called The Runner Stumbles, where he played a priest. He appeared in Warren Beatty's Dick Tracy. He was wonderful in that. He was of Curious George. He was in that. Night at the Museum movies, he did that. A lot of documentaries you can find him in. And then last year he was in Mary Poppins Returns, putting the younger people to shame with the energy that he had in that show. So, or in that movie. Yeah. So, Dick Van Dyke, lots of movies that you can check out. The one that I really wanted to mention for sure was Cold Turkey. And if you've not seen Cold Turkey, you should. It's really, really, really fun. Let's see. We got more texts here. Cleveland Tom texts in, I remember my grandparents loving Diagnosis Murder when I was young. My parents had introduced me to Dick Van Dyke previously, so I didn't want to watch it because he was not the funny man or tripping over the ottoman. The show was on for years. I wonder if it's worth finding, if it's any good. Well, it had a huge run, Diagnosis Murder. I think it was on for like 8 seasons, that show. It was actually on longer than the Dick Van Dyke show ran. And here's the other thing about the opening credits of Dick Van Dyke. When he walks in and famously trips over the ottoman, there are also the episodes where he actually doesn't trip over the ottoman. He stops himself and kicks himself sideways so he doesn't trip over the ottoman. I always was disappointed with that because I wanted him to trip over the ottoman. It made me laugh every single time. So on the episodes of the opening credit where he actually didn't, I was always disappointed. Mike from Manuka said Dick Van Dyke was a radio show host in Danville, Illinois for a while. Wild Bill here, the song Put On a Happy Face from Bye Bye Birdie. Dick Van Dyke was in both the live Broadway stage and the movie. The movie also had Anne Margaret, and it sucked. Too many stupid changes from the original live stage musical. Yeah, I remember not liking Bye Bye Birdie very much. So, all right, how about some more of these classic episodes of the Dick Van Dyke show? First, Buddy thought Rob and Sally were having an affair. Then Rob thought Buddy was having an affair with a married woman. This episode's encouraged the thought that Buddy and Sally are also having an affair, but it's literally all an act. It's always fun to watch Amsterdam and Marie perform. Features one of the only appearances by those dancing suburbanites, Lester and Esther Bushmaster. how about this? A mild concussion is nothing to laugh at, but this Rob Reiner pen gem benefits from a hilarious jump cut that finds an amnesiac Rob partying in Red Hook after a prop mishap causes him to lose his memory. Sally Jones is wonderful as the ditz who is swept off her feet by Rob's Sergeant Antonio Stradivarius. That's actually one of my favorite episodes. As I was mentioning before, this classic episode of The Honeymooners. So Ralph has this guy that he's trying to impress. He's like a boss at the bus company or something like that. And so they're invited over for dinner. So, you know, Alice comes with, and so does Trixie and Ed. So they show up at the house, and his wife, this guy who they're trying to, you know, they're trying to impress and get him to like them, has this really ditzy blonde girlfriend with the high voice, and she smokes a cigarette with a cigarette holder. And so in order to impress the boss, both Ed and Ralph go out of their way to compliment everything about this woman. About how beautiful she is, about how, you know, the cooking is great, even though she doesn't do the cooking, and she's a complete, utter ditz. And so this behavior goes on, and it's really making Alice and Trixie very angry, that these guys are just doting over this complete moron woman. But they don't really mean it. They just, you know, they want to impress this guy, whose wife is this idiot. So they do this, and they get, you know, and so they leave early. They say they have Alice and Trixie say they have a headache, and they want to leave. So they end up leaving, and then Ralph goes to work, comes home the next day, and Alice comes out, and she's dressed like a bimbo, like the blonde-haired girl, and she's got the long cigarette, and she comes out, she goes, "How you doing, baby?" And, like, is, like, all over Ralph, and Ralph's like, "All right," and he's looking at her like she's nuts, and then he goes, "So, all right, Alice, you've been at that rum candy again, haven't you?" And then she's like, "Would you like me to get something to drink?" And he goes, "Yeah, yeah, listen, I'll have what you're having. I'd like to get loaded too." You know, and then she's like, "What isn't, you know," then finally they, you know, she drops the act, and he's like, "What the hell is wrong with you?" You know, and she's like, "Well, isn't that what you like? You know, last night you were fawning over that woman." And then he had to explain to her, "No, I just did it because I need this guy to be my boss." And so, but when Alice, "You've been at that rum candy again. Oh, I'll have what you're having. I want to get loaded, too." Tom, you got to watch The Honeymooners, man.
I know. It's all there. I think I said it was on Amazon. I've got it in front of me.
There's 39 episodes, man.
Listen, you've also given me a list of 100,000 movies that I have to watch. There's only so much time in the day,
I know.
Only so much time in the day.
But, you know, The Honeymooners is essential, though, man. I mean, it's just classic. It's the greatest show ever. It's the best.
All right, so that's what I'll do. When we get off the air, I'll go watch like 5 episodes of The Honeymooners, Deep Rising.
Yeah.
And then I'll go for Shoot the Moon another time.
Another time, yeah. Yeah.
My brain.
I understand. I understand. But I don't know why I'm surprised that you haven't seen The Honeymooners, because it's just so ubiquitous. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it's been on for so many years and reruns all over the place.
Well, because it was all British TV growing up.
Oh,
it was,
right.
Because my dad's from the UK, and even my grandparents here, my grandmother is Irish, my grandfather is Italian, and he didn't really watch TV.
Right.
So everything we watched was imported.
I gotcha. All right, I understand. You're forgiven.
Thank you. Thank you for the mea culpa.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly. No, it's just weird because it was a nightly thing for me. I watched The Honeymooners every night. Every night. It was on at like 10 o'clock on Channel 32. I watched it every single night. And I know every episode by heart. I've got the whole DVD set of the 39. And I've seen every episode. I'm not kidding. I've seen every episode like 50 times. I'm not exaggerating. I laugh every single time. So, all right, let's take a break. When we come back, we'll wrap up the Dick Van Dyke discussion. If you want to jump in with a text or a talk, it's 312-981-7200, celebrating the 94th birthday of Dick Van Dyke right here on 720 WGN.
Because I was afraid to speak when I was just a lad. My father gave me nails and tweak, told me I was bad. But then one day I learned a word to say, we ain't a nose.
The biggest word you ever heard, and this is how we go. Oh, supercalifragilisticexpialidocious. Even though the salary is something quite atrocious, you can say it loud.
Ah, yes. Yeah, Mary Poppins. Hard to believe. You know how we were talking about how it's amazing that some actors and actresses, their first movie is just so iconic. Like, their first role is amazing. Like, Edward Norton's first acting role was Primal Fear. Alan Rickman's first movie was Die Hard. Like, right out of the gate, he's Hans Gruber. That was Julie Andrews' first movie.
Which is just remarkable.
Isn't that unbelievable?
I can't remember. She might have been here last night. She's here.
Yeah, no, she's at the Chicago Theater. She appeared at the Chicago Theater.
God, how much do I love her?
Oh.
She wrote a book.
Written two now.
Yeah. She wrote a book, like a fiction book for kids.
Oh, right.
That we had to read back when I was in like maybe fourth grade. The Last of the Really Great Wang Doodles.
Yeah.
And
she's written children's books, yeah. and she wrote two memoirs, one with her daughter. That the latest one is the one that she just wrote with her daughter. Yeah. And she made the appearances on the she did the circuit on the talk shows, and Stephen Colbert was beside himself.
How do you even talk to her?
Beside himself. He was just like, I can't believe you're here, you know.
Yeah. I would be openly weeping. I would be like, I love you so much.
Yeah.
And, you know, she's the type of person that takes the fame really well, I think.
It's the other thing is, like, I remember Anne Hathaway being interviewed, and they brought up the Princess Diaries, and she said that she couldn't function. Like, when she first walked on set, like when Julie Andrews first walked on set and she had to do a scene, with her. She was like, I can't do this. I can't be in a scene with Julie Andrews. What? Do you ever see the stuff that she did with her husband, Blake Edwards? Did you see 10?
Yeah.
Love that movie.
It's
best movie ever made about middle-aged men. That and Sideways are the best movies ever made about being middle-aged. 10 is the best movie ever made about turning 40. That it is at, without question. It's a brilliant movie. It's my favorite Blake Edwards movie. Did you ever see SOB, where she showed her boobies?
What?
Oh, yeah.
Well, I don't want to see that.
Oh, no. You got to see it. It's fantastic. No, you have to see it.
Okay.
That's one of the reasons why the scene is so great, because it's Mary Poppins and she shows her boobs.
God.
It's great. She plays an actress, and they're, you know, the director is like, they want to make a hit. And in the movie, she plays a variation of Julie Andrews. She plays like, you know, a woman who's known for family movies and, you know, like everybody loves their kids, love her. She's very innocent and lovely. And so there's a scene that they do a musical number. And she rips off the thing and then there's Julie Andrews' boobs.
Oh, my God. You're crass.
And by the way, that movie, SOB, one of the best movies ever made about Hollywood, with an unbelievable cast. William Holden, Robert Preston, Richard Mulligan. God, everybody's dead in that movie. And there's more, the cast goes on, and it is Blake Edwards' searing depiction of Hollywood. Like, he goes, that's why he had Julie Andrews take off, they were married at the time, that's why he had Julie Andrews take off her top. Because this is where Hollywood, this is how far Hollywood is going to sink. You know, it's like this beautiful child loving actress that every family loves now has to show her breasts. And it's a hilarious scene because she gets drunk. Her character gets drunk because she's so nervous. She gets drunk and she's like, at one point, there's like right before they do the take, she's drinking and she's like, I'm going to show my boobies. She's one of her lines.
Good Lord.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I tell you, when the movie came out, people went nuts over that. They were like, whoa. So, yeah, Blake Edwards talked her into to showing her breasts. Julie Andrews shows her breasts in SOB.
It's for art.
It was, and it's hilarious. It's you know, it's a really incredible satire, though. You should check out. And you get to see Julie Andrews' breasts, so.
I don't know if I am morally prepared for that. I don't know.
Well, that's the thing. That's why it was such a big deal. When the movie came out, people were like, what? Mary Poppins is just showing her boobs?
Well, I guess I will say it's got to be kind of like when you see early stuff by Helen Mirren, where she's when she was basically a pinup back in the early days of her career.
Oh my God,
because like, what's the first movie I ever saw her in was The Queen.
Oh no!
And I'm just like, oh my God, The Queen.
No,
where's lingerie?
I'll tell you something, man. Excalibur was the first movie I remember her in. Oh my God. Then I went back and tried to watch some of the earlier stuff, but. You know, did you see The Cook, The Wife?
Yeah.
Thief and Her...
It's a great movie.
Oh, my God.
Great.
It was Excalibur. Excalibur was... I remember going, what? And that's where Liam Neeson... They started a relationship. Liam Neeson's and Helen Mirren were together for a while. And they met on Excalibur. And he tells this... Because he was on Graham Norton. They were promoting different movies. They were both there together. And then Graham Norton goes, weren't you guys an item? And they were like, oh, yeah, we lived together for a few years. And they were they're very casual about it.
I wonder...
She's married to Taylor Hackford now,
yes,
obviously.
Yes,
and they've been together for a long time. But Liam Neeson and Helen Mirren had a little thing.
What they a lived power together. Couple.
Yeah. But he describes the first time seeing Helen Mirren walk on the set. And he was with one of the other actors in Excalibur. Uh-huh. And they both looked at each other and went, we're in trouble. Because she's... breathtaking.
He goes up to hit on her. Listen, I have a very specific
exactly
set
right.
of skills.
Exactly right. So they say that the number one Dick Van Dyke episode is Coast to Coast Big Mouth. The fifth and final season kicks off with the series' best episode, courtesy of Bill Persky and Sam Denoff, who were awarded an Emmy for their efforts on this one. In it, Laura accidentally spills the beans on a game show that Alan Brady is bald. Laura's character has evolved to this point that she will not allow Rob to take the blame and attempts to apologize personally to Alan, one of the funniest scenes in the show's long celebrated run. So that's what they think is the best one, the Alan Brady wears a toupee episode with Laura. So a classic show, the Dick Van Dyke Show, and an amazing performer, 94 years old, still doing it. If you've not seen Mary Poppins Returns, it's not a great movie. But I encourage everybody to at least see the scene where the number that that Dick Van Dyke has, and be aware he's 92 when they filmed it. He was 92 years old when they filmed it. So just keep that in mind while you watch him have more energy and dance more than like somebody in their 20s. So, okay, legendary guy. Why don't we take a break? And when we come back, Vic Vaughn will be with us. Our regular Friday features will begin, and we will learn what Vic is listening to in the latest edition of Vic's Picks, which is coming up next after this break on 720 WGN. All right, welcome back, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. It's Friday, and now the Friday features begin. A little bit later on, we're going to have You Big Dummy. We got Straight Out of Context. We got Nick D's Show Spies, and of course, we're going to get funky Fly Jams Friday. If you got any Fly Jam requests, Luscious Hushos will play them later, and the phone number is 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200, and we're also got a very unfortunate Blackhawks, what a season, Blackhawks Express to play back. But we kick off our regular feature with our good friend Vic Vaughn. Vic, welcome.
Morning, sir.
How are you, buddy?
I'm hanging in there.
All right. So, Vic, you started a musical journey a little while ago.
Yeah, that's been fun.
You wanted to learn about music because you admittedly didn't know anything about it, really.
Very, very little.
So you went through the list of Rolling Stones' top 100 albums of all time. You listened to all of them. and then you were, you know, we talked about it on the air.
Yeah.
And now you've moved on to a different list to continue your music journey.
Right.
And it's the best albums of the 21st century.
According to The Guardian.
According to The Guardian.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
So that's what you're doing now. And we have a little, we want to talk a little bit later on. This, you've turned this into a podcast.
Yeah, yeah, and the genesis was Vic's Picks right here on your show.
On the show. So we'll tell everybody about how they can get the podcast.
Cool.
Yeah, and we'll do that a little bit later.
Yeah.
So, well, let's make it official, right?
What came first, music or the misery?
100 albums.
Nobody worries about kids listening to thousands, literally thousands of songs about heartbreak, rejection, pain, misery, and loss.
One, Vic Vaughn.
Did I listen to pop music because I was miserable? Or was I miserable because I listened to pop music?
It's Vic's Picks, Side B.
Oh, there it is. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here, and this is the Vic's Picks. So, Vic, we are on, what number are we on?
98. Long way to go.
Exactly.
Yeah,
okay, so these are the, according to The Guardian, the best albums of the 21st century.
Yeah.
And I guarantee you that about 80% of these I will not know. So we're going
to... We're in this together this time.
Uh-huh.
Very big departure from the last time.
Yeah, because
you knew every one of them.
Exactly.
And I knew about two on the last
because
one.
Because I'm an old dude. I still, you know, like, I'll go home and listen to Zeppelin. That's, you know...
Wow.
The new stuff for me...
I do too now.
Yeah, well, I know you do. I know you do. So, okay.
Man.
Let's...
Life has gotten better. Let me say that.
Okay.
Yeah, so this one, number 98, is Chimanche by Rakia Traore.
I have no idea what you just said.
Yeah. Believe me, dude, I had to YouTube every single, so much about this just to get the pronunciation right. But Rakia Traore is a singer-songwriter, instrumentalist from Mali, West Africa.
Okay.
She's the daughter of a diplomat, so she's very well-traveled. She's educated. She got into music when she was in college. And this album, Chimanche, it's her third album.
Okay.
Okay, so she wrote, composed, arranged it, did just about everything, except for one cover song. There's a cover song on this album. But the album was released in January of 2009 by Nonesuch Records, American label based.
Oh, I know the label, yeah.
Yeah, Warner Brothers owns it. But it's out in New York City. But it's a guitar album. And I've learned something about myself, which is I love songs, great songs that are centered around guitar.
Well, that's how you went nuts over Hendrix.
Yep. Yep. He blew my mind wide open, and so did Pink Floyd and a bunch of others on that first 100 albums. But this this album, but at the core of it, it's a guitar album.
Right.
To me. And since starting... well, I didn't understand any of the lyrics in this album because she sings in Bamanken, which is the national language of Mali.
Okay.
And so, but she also sings in French, and there's that cover song is in English.
Okay.
We'll get to that. But I enjoyed this album, Chimanche. It's intimate. It's minimalistic. And like I said, the guitar and her voice, you don't need to know what the words are. It's beautiful.
Sure.
It was engineered by Phil Brown. I read about him. I didn't know who he was. I read about him. He's a legend. He worked with Bob Marley, and the list goes on with Phil Brown. But Chimanche is the follow-up album to Traore's 2003 album, highly acclaimed breakthrough album for her called Bound Boy. I hope I'm pronouncing that right. But Chimanche, it's considered Afro-pop. Again, Nonesuch Records is the label. Their website says Chimanche stems from a quote, simple inspiration, the sound of an old Gretsch guitar, and employs a traditional pop rhythm section, end quote. That's from Nonesuch's website. It also employs a human beatbox, and that was done by a guy named Sly Johnson. I looked him up because I didn't know him. He's an American blues and soul singer, record producer. There's also a traditional drummer on this album for percussion on Chimanche. It's Vincent Tager. He's a French drummer. But interesting note also regarding instrumentation before we get into the music. It employs Nguni, which looks like a little bit like a very tiny guitar without the sound hole. And it puts out a beautiful, crisp sound. I loved it. And they also use the Western classical harp in this album a lot. So Traore herself for this album is on lead vocals and guitar, a Gretsch guitar. And I found quickly, I found a 2009 article in Pitchfork by Joshua Klein, and he gave a really good breakdown of what the album's about, which was, again, helpful because it's in Bamankan and I don't speak that.
Right.
Do you?
No. I barely speak English, man.
Yeah, right. Right. So he says Traore in this album wrote about declaring her love of and pride for Africa. She also writes about Zen. She calls it the pleasure of doing nothing, and there's a protest song on this album about anti-immigration, about people leaving Congo, Nigeria, and Mali. There's a Billie Holiday cover on this album, which is amazing, and we're going to hear a little bit from it. And she stays very loyal to the way Billie Holiday sang it. Mm-hmm. And that's in English, but we'll get to that one. But for Cut One, it's a song called Dianfa, and Tom's got a little bit of that. It's from Side A, track two, a song called Dianfa. Oh, do you hear her
really
voice,
good.
Man?
Yeah. Whoa. She's got a great voice.
Yeah. And
really, really spare, too. You know, it's sparse. It's
yeah.
Really nice. Yeah.
Yes.
No, that's
no
nice.
There's space in between. I mean, that's what I mean when I heard this album. She gives a lot of room in each song for each note and just uses her voice
really
like
nice. Really
it's
nice.
Beautiful, beautiful album. I told Tom, after that first track, I downloaded it and saved it because I'm going to play it. It's great background music.
Yeah.
The next one, Kunandi. This is from side B of the first LP. There's two
it's a double album?
Yeah.
Okay.
For Chimanche. Kunandi's influenced by Algerian and Moroccan pop. Tom? The
that's
guitar.
Beautiful,
right?
Man. Oh my God.
Man, I love that.
Man, you know what's going to be fun about this? Is that, when we did the other top 100, I knew all the albums already.
Yes.
This is going to be like discovering like some new stuff. And this is fantastic. What we're listening to right now, this is beautiful.
When Tom came up, he came up with this list.
Yeah.
I didn't like it at first. I don't know if you remember, Tom, but I didn't like the idea of going, kind of departing from the great albums of all time. But it took a few months, maybe a month or so, and I realized this could be fun
well,
for
the
not
other
only
thing
me,
is,
but for you.
Not just for me, but I think the listeners. I think a lot of people who may be not up on the 21st century stuff hear this. And I bet a lot of people right now who are listening right now go, my God, that was beautiful.
Great point.
And they're going to download this.
Great point.
So, all right, what else we got?
Rokia Traore, Chamache is the name
Traore.
Of the album.
Rokia Traore.
Yep, Rokia Traore. This next one's the title track. It's track two from side A of the second LP, Chamache. And Tom's got some of that.
Great.
Now, this last cut that I picked was Traore actually toured alongside Diana Reeves back in 2005, 4 years before the release of this album, Chimanche, paying tribute to Billie Holiday. That's what that whole tour was about.
Oh, sure, yeah.
Yeah, so this track, this final track that we're going to hear from, is also from side A of the second LP, cover of Billie Holiday, song covered called The Man I Love.
Classic song.
Yeah.
Someday he'll come along, the man I love, and he'll be big and strong, the man I love.
and he comes my way, I'll do my best to make him.
Okay. I officially love this one.
Right?
I officially love this
Tom,
one.
Tom, what do you think?
The vocals are amazing, and it's nice because I'm not a lyrics person, so I get to just focus more on the quality and the timbre of her voice and enjoy that. But that guitar work is incredible.
It is beautiful.
It is. She is absolutely flying on the frets.
That is her is playing the quick. Guitar, man. Aggressive guitar.
This is unbelievable, man.
I consumed so much from her over this last week that I barely had time to listen to this next one, which I like too, but this was a great album.
Question about it. Tell everybody her name again.
Rokia Traore.
Rokia Traore, her first name is Rokia, and then the last name is Traore.
Right, Chimanche. She's got seven albums, but Chimanche is the name of this one.
Yeah. Man, that's good. Only does she have her voice is just haunting and beautiful, and even if you don't understand, it doesn't matter that you don't understand the lyrics. I think,
just like Tom said, I think you're right.
And the guitar work and the instrumentation is really, really amazing. And I just like it because it's like this, like I mentioned before, it's really sparse.
Yeah,
and like you can just like chill out and listen to
totally.
It, and it's not too busy, it's not noisy.
It really didn't matter that I did. I had no idea what she
I
was
would
saying.
No, listen to me. I would listen to this record. I wouldn't understand a word of it, but what I've heard here is beautiful.
It's gorgeous.
It's great, man. Right out
she's
of the gate,
amazing.
Right out of the gate this morning, I want to buy something now.
Right. Awesome.
I want to learn more about this woman. She's got seven albums. All right, I'll be listening to all of them.
Amazing. See, that's what this is all about.
It is. It really is.
A lot of
okay.
fun.
Why don't we take a break? Okay, we got the next album that we're going to do, and then we'll listen to some of that. And we also want to talk about your podcast that is tied into Vix Picks. Okay, more of Vix Picks coming up, and we've got another album to go through. And if you guys want to comment on any of the stuff that you've heard, send a text or call us at 312-981-7200. We're learning along with Vic now because the last list I knew everything already.
Right.
So now I'm learning, and I've already really loved what we've heard this morning. Okay, let's take a quick break. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. More with Vic and his picks after this. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN Friday morning. The Friday morning features are doing it right now. We're doing it with Vic's Picks. And then we got Straight Out of Context, Nick D Show Spies, You Big Dummy, all coming up. 312-981-7200 is the phone number if you got any feedback on some of the music that we've been listening to this morning. All right, let's get back to it. Vic's Picks. Vic, welcome back, my friend.
Thank you, sir.
Okay, what's the next album that we are going to hear?
97 on this list of the best 100 in the 21st century, best 100 albums in the 21st century, according to The Guardian, is an album called Ruby Blue by Roisin Murphy. She's an Irish singer-songwriter.
Tell by the first name.
Yeah.
Oh, and the last name.
Right. She actually calls Billie Eilish her kindred spirit.
Really?
Now, yes. After listening to her. And if you go back in, which I had to do, go back and watch some of Roisin Murphy's early stuff, you get an idea why she feels like Billie Eilish is her kindred spirit.
And she's the hottest thing on the planet right now.
Right.
Billie Eilish.
And Roisin Murphy was a very hot thing too, but she wasn't very well known. She first became known back in the mid-90s with a band called Moloko in England, but it was not big here in the U.S.
Right.
at all.
So she's bigger in the U.K. than she is here.
I don't know. I mean, I'm the wrong guy to ask, but I know that the band she first became known for, Moloko, was not a big thing here.
And by the way, The Guardian is a British publication,
right?
So some of the stuff that you're going to be listening to is probably skewed more British,
maybe a little skewed
more popular,
that.
More popular in the UK
or
than
overseas in general.
Yeah.
That's a good point.
Yeah,
which is really cool for us because we get to expose ourselves a little bit to that. But she went out on her own after they broke up, Moloko, and started her solo career. In fact, this album I just listened to, Ruby Blue, this was her debut solo album.
Okay.
But she was born in Ireland, lived there until she was 12. Her family moved to Manchester when she was 15. Her parents,
that's a big adjustment.
Yeah, right. Well, then when she, check this out. So she moves to, she's 12. Her family picks her up, moves her out of her hometown in Ireland, a small community in Ireland. I can't remember the name of the town, but it was a small community. Moved to Manchester.
Wow.
when she was 15. So just 3 years later, after that big move, big change in her life, her parents divorce.
Oh.
And they move back to Ireland separately. She stays in Manchester.
Okay.
She
15?
Yes.
Wow.
Yes.
All right.
So that tells you a little bit about this woman. She was strong. She was a strong, independent woman. She went to college for a while, lived with a friend in Manchester until she qualified for housing benefit and moved into a place on her own. Tooled around with her first band. They played out 6 times before they broke up. And then in 94, she met a guy named Mark Bryson, and they started dating. He auditioned her, liked her delivery, and they started Moloko, this band.
Okay.
And they had some good success over there, but it wasn't a big band here in the U.S. But they were signed by Echo Records, and in fact, her debut album was titled "Do You Like My Tight Sweater?" And here's the funny backstory to that, as she tells it, that was her pickup line when she met Bryson.
That's hilarious.
She said, "Do you like my tight sweater and
that's
the way it fits
hilarious.
My body?" So, but moving on to this album, Ruby Blue, it's been compared to Billie Eilish's debut album, When We All Fall Asleep, Where Do We Go? That's Eilish's debut album. Murphy actually started writing Ruby Blue before Moloko broke up, but she didn't record any of it until 2004. Matthew Herbert produced Ruby Blue. He's a British electronic musician. She knew him. They had worked together before when she was in Moloko. But the album Ruby Blue is considered electropop or dance pop or alt disco, and it was released in 2005 under the Echo label. So we're going to start off with the first cut, Night of the Dancing Flame. It's track 3 on her CD, a song called Night of the Dancing Flame. Well done, Tom. She's so cool. I think she's very cool, man.
Yeah.
We'll rapid fire. This next one is track 5. I want to say I like the first half of this CD a lot. This one's a song called So Into You.
Okay.
I want to fit in a couple more because the last one's really good, I think. But cut 3, Dear Diary, Tom.
But I keep it locked behind a golden wall of cider. You see, I have my pride, and I won't be telling you anytime soon. Too afraid to say it.
And then we'll fit in this next one. She wrote, it's called If We're in Love, and she wrote If We're in Love about Herbert. It kind of suggests that the two of them should go off on their own and start a songwriting duo. So Tom's got some from If We're in Love.
If we're in love, we should make love. If we're in love, we should make love. If we're in love, we should make love. When will we be lovers? If we're in love, we should make love.
That was track 7. After track 7 on this album, it gets kind of, it's very different than the first 7 tracks, and I had it kind of struggled to get into it. Rama Lama is the next song, and it kind of it gets very theatrical, jazzy, dark, experimental. Mm-hmm. And if you remember back when we were doing the first 100 albums, I kind of got lost in the experimental stuff a little bit.
Yeah, you know.
And especially, you know, as a beginner, you know.
Yeah.
So, but I definitely like the first seven songs on this track and on this album, Ruby Blue by Roshan Murphy. And she is a very, very cool woman. I will definitely check out some more of her stuff. So that was Ruby Blue by Roshan Murphy.
Yeah, I liked it. I prefer the first album that we
listened to. Yeah, that first one's...
A lot, because this is not my, you know, this electronic dance stuff, the Lady Gaga type stuff, not my thing.
Me neither.
It's just not my thing.
Did you guys pick up, I don't know, so the first, her first band was called Moloko, right?
Right, Moloko.
That's Clockwork Orange.
Yeah.
That's the milk that they drink. I love that. I think that's really cool.
Yeah. So, all right. And now tell everybody about your podcast. But And you're doing this as a podcast as well. Now, this is just something you just started, right?
Yeah, it's a spinoff from what you asked. The list that I started, the 100 greatest albums
from
of all
Rolling
time,
Stone.
According to Rolling Stone.
Right.
You caught wind that I was doing that, and then you started checking in with me once a week or really every night. What do you listen to now? And so since then. I've started this podcast called Album University Podcast. It's the first episode is up now. It's on the Apple Store, iTunes. You can get it there, or you just Google Album University Podcast and it'll come up because I put it on a thing called Simplecast, which if you're a podcaster, it's a lifesaver.
Yeah,
it'll spit it out to all of the platforms. And right now it's only on iTunes, But also, if you just Google Album University Podcast, you'll find it. But it's on Chuck Berry, which was, I think, definitely top 10 for me. It was Chuck Berry, The Great 28, on that first list we did. Mm-hmm. Every song on that album I just loved. It just makes me dance.
Well, this is the thing that you were talking about. You have an affinity for the guitar. And that's Chuck Berry, man.
Yep.
I mean, the riff master. You know, one of the founders of rock and roll.
Forget
One of the creators of rock and roll. With no question.
Yeah.
All right, so it's
put a lot of thought into picking that one first too because of that, and the next one. So that's up. We only have one episode so far. We're doing one a month right now.
Yeah.
And my plan on this podcast is to do one a week.
Okay.
But I need more help. So right now I've got two people helping me.
Right.
Kenjamin Franklin with Radioactive Talent in New York, and a friend of mine, John O'Lyle, who I went to school with.
Yeah.
And
Kenjamin is a loyal listener of the show.
I actually talked with you about him.
Yeah.
And so right now, we're only able to do one a month. So we got the first one up.
Okay.
The next one is going to be, I think you'll approve, it's an album that changed music in the 70s, Rumors by Fleetwood Mac.
Great
and
album.
We're working on it right now. We got an interview with Ken Calais.
Okay, cool. All right, well, that's Vic's Picks. And again, what's the title of the podcast?
Album University Podcast.
Album University Podcast. All right, let's take a break for the news.
Here's the dummy. You big dummy. You big dummy. See what you did?
Oh, no, you big dummy.
You dummy.
Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, here till 4 a.m. We'll hear the simulcast of our good friends over at Bradley Place with the WGN-TV Morning News. And then at 5 o'clock, Steve Cochran has your morning drive for this Friday. And it is Friday, which means all the regular features have begun. We've got Nick D Show Spies coming up. We've got Straight Out of Context, and we have Fly Jams Friday. But we started off right now with...
You Big Dummy!
You know this. This is when we read news stories of real people doing real dumb stuff and being really, really stupid. And then we vote on the winner. Tom votes, I vote, and then the first person through at 312-981-7200 also votes.
Dummy number one. Dummy number one. Dummy one.
She went from sandwich artist to con artist. Police in New Mexico arrested a Subway restaurant employee after she staged a robbery in her own shop, allegedly because, quote, she wanted to teach one of the employees a lesson, unquote. Lorena Ariana Marin told officers she staged a robbery at the Las Cruces subway where she worked in order to teach one of the employees a lesson about what could happen late at night in this part of town. Lorena Ariana Marin, the subway employee, and her alleged accomplice, Angelo Ray Espinoza, orchestrated the fake robbery on Monday, bursting into the store with masks over their faces. Marin, 22, then hopped over the counter and began verbally and physically threatening the two on-duty employees, while Espinoza, 19, stood by. The woman also ordered one of the employees to get rid of the customer at the drive-thru window. Marin and Espinoza soon herded the two employees towards the back of the store, at which point one employee bolted out of the eatery and made it to her car. The two suspects fled the scene shortly after. Police caught up with Marin and Espinoza within minutes of the crime after a citizen reported seeing a suspicious vehicle parked nearby. Inside the car, officers found Marin and Espinoza. Marin was identified as a possible suspect after one of the subway employees claimed to have recognized her voice during the robbery. Police say Marin, 22, with accomplice Angelo Ray Espinoza, 19, were apprehended within minutes of the crime.
Before this game, you were just a plain dummy. But after the night, you'd be a broke dummy. Sold to the dummy with the black mustache.
Dummy number two. Dummy number two. Dummy two. Out on the interstate, we all see drivers distracted behind the wheel with their phones, food, and personal grooming. However, most of us probably have never seen someone playing an instrument behind the wheel until today. There are a lot of people who get into accidents because of distracted driving, said 13-year-old Brinley Eggett. That's obvious to Brinley. At approximately 5:30 p.m. on November 18th, she and her older sister shot video of a man playing a trumpet while driving with their family in Utah County. He had no hands on the wheel part of the time. She showed the video to a teacher who shared it with KASL-TV. They think it would be a wake-up call to other distracted drivers. I think it's pretty dangerous because you aren't using your hands to drive. You're also not looking at the road. It's a guy playing a trumpet.
What kind of life do you think it is being the father of a young dummy? And for every dummy, there's a dummy.
Dummy number three, dummy number three, da, 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 three. A disgraced police sergeant who tried to frame his wife by head-butting a door and claiming she punched him has lost his job and been ordered to carry out community service. Barry Murphy was in police uniform when he head-butted his front door and began punching himself at his former home. He hoped to land his estranged wife in trouble, but his plan backfired when a teenager filmed this bizarre ham-acting antics on her mobile phone. Footage of the story shows Murphy yelling, "You just hit me! I cannot believe you just hit me!" when there was no one close to him at all at the time. His wife had called the police, and Murphy was apparently trying to put his assault claim on the recorded call. Murphy is now being kicked out of the police and looking for a new job while going through divorce proceedings.
One dummy ain't enough in this house. You gotta bring home super dummy. But if you and Rollo gonna be in the movie, I got the perfect name for it. Super Dummies.
Dummy number four. Dummy number four. Dummy number four. He made it a Methodist church. Methodist church. A Maine man has been charged with turning a kid's playroom in a Methodist church into a meth lab. Matthew Anderson, 33. I wish his name was Walter White. Matthew Anderson, 33, was busted after officials at Buxton United Methodist Church alerted police on Thursday to suspicious activity inside an upstairs playroom at the House of Worship, Buxton police said. Officers then called the Maine Drug Enforcement Agency after finding items that are consistent with manufacturing process of methamphetamine. And the force revealed in a statement, Anderson is being charged with unlawful operation of a methamphetamine lab. He is being held in York County Jail after failing to post $50,000 bond, police say. He's due in Superior Court on January 24th.
There's something for you right here. Warning, dummy. Won't be long before we'll hear the pitter-patter of tiny dummies around the house.
Dummy number five, dummy number five, dummy number five. Deputies have charged a Fort Myers man for impersonating an officer after reports he operated his Bentley car as if he were law enforcement. 30-year-old Christopher Duluck is charged with felony falsely impersonating a law enforcement officer and his vehicle seized. According to the Lee County Sheriff's Office, deputies received reports that Duluck was operating his 2009 Bentley in a reckless manner, utilizing a police siren and lights to maneuver around traffic and intimidate others. Because, you know, there are so many police cars that are Bentleys. Duluck also reportedly attempted to a traffic stop on a motorist utilizing lights and sirens, but drove off at a high rate of speed when the citizen pulled over. A search warrant was served at his Little Gem Circle home, and he was taken into custody. A search of his vehicle revealed a speed measurement device similar to what is commonly used by law enforcement and police-style antennas mounted on the car.
Spell it for you. D-U-M-M-Y, period. Dummy.
All right. Let's take a break. We'll come back. We'll do the recap and we'll vote. If you want to vote, I'll do the recap afterwards. First person through will be our third vote. Tom will vote. I will vote. And then we'll pick the dummy of the week. Yeah. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and we are live in the Skyline studio, and we are here until 4 a.m. The regular Friday features are happening right now. We're continuing with You Big Dummy. We got Straight Out of Context coming up, Nick D Show Spies, and then things are going to get funky with Luscious Hushes and Fly Jams Friday. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. All right, we have to vote on the dummies. Let me do a recap, and then the first person through at 312-981-7200 will be our third vote. Okay, we got the dummy Subway employee who staged a fake robbery to teach an employee a lesson. We have the dummy driver who played trumpet while driving. We have the dummy police sergeant who headbutted a door to frame his wife. We have the dummy who turned a church playroom into a meth lab. And we have the dummy who impersonated a cop while in a Bentley. Because there are so many Bentley police cars out there on the streets. All right, Tom, what's your brainwaves?
My brainwave, well, I'll give the runner-up to the guy playing the trumpet in his car because, you know what, it's dangerous, but it is endearing.
Mm-hmm.
And I used to play the trumpet when I was in fifth grade,
shout
out. But I think the dummy is really, it's the guy who beat himself up to try and claim that his wife did it, but videotaped it.
Well, like, he didn't videotape it,
but someone was like, I actually watched the video.
Yeah. Somebody had their phone right, you know.
Yeah, just right there.
It was a teenager, just, yeah.
Yeah, a teenager videotaping him doing it.
Yeah.
You didn't think that was going to get out?
Yeah.
And also because that story's coming to us from Fife, which is in Scotland.
Oh, sure.
And proving that Scotland has just as many dummies as the rest of this planet. So
there you go.
I got to give it to him.
Okay, I'm going to vote here, but we want to hear you guys. We want to hear from you guys. We did the recap. Which dummy do you think that you would vote for? 312-981-7200. First person through gets our third vote. Okay, so the Subway employee who staged the fake robbery, it's the stupidest thing. I mean, How do you not think you're going to get busted?
It never works. People try to do that kind of stuff all the time. It never works.
I mean, it just is ridiculous. I think the guy who was trying to impersonate a cop, there's just something weird going on there. He had all that stuff in his car. He put the lights out and everything. But the thing is, again, the key to this story is that he has a Bentley. I mean, because you don't, there are not a lot of cop cars out there that are Bentleys.
No.
So, so he's an idiot. But I think, obviously the visual of a guy playing a trumpet while driving is pretty hilarious. You got to admit that that's absolutely hilarious. Some guy just playing the trumpet while driving. But I have to agree with you. I've got to go with the idiot police sergeant who smashed his face off of a door. Hey, I can't believe you hit me.
Why would you do this?
Why would you hit me? So if we phone lines are open, get in here, man. We need one more voter. So get in now. It's already, we want to see if it's going to be unanimous. So call right now at 312-981-7200 and cast your vote for who you think is the biggest dummy. Tom and I both picked the stupid police sergeant who smashed his head off a door to frame his wife. So 312-981-7200. Call up right now. Phone lines are open. First person through will vote. So we got the dummy subway employee who staged a fake robbery. We got the dummy driver who played a trumpet while he was driving. We got the dummy police sergeant who headbutted a door to frame his wife. We got the dummy who turned a church playroom into a meth lab. And the dummy who impersonated a cop while in a Bentley. 312-981-7200. Okay, hello? Hello, is this on? Is this on? Phone lines are open right now. It's real easy. You call 312-981-7200 and you cast your vote for which you think is the biggest dummy. So there you go. Jeez. All right. Oh, I think we have someone here. Let's see. All right. All right, yeah, here we go. Jill, who do you think is the biggest dummy?
The meth lab.
The meth lab. Okay, you're going with the meth lab. The guy who turned a church playroom into a meth lab.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, cool. Thanks. See ya. Bye. By the way, my phone just came on.
No, it's looking for meth labs.
It said, "What can I help you with?" And it says, "Meth lab." Like, it says that I asked my phone to find a meth lab.
Oh, well, now the government's going to know.
This is ridiculous. No, I don't want help with a meth lab. How did that happen? Was it Google's just ready to go if you need a
She's there for anything you need.
How can I help you? And it says, with a meth lab. Like I said, with a meth lab.
I'm sorry, Nick. No meth labs in your area.
I don't understand this, and I didn't know that was a feature on my phone.
The meth lab lookup?
One of the great, one of the great features on my phone, apparently, is that it can show you where meth labs are located.
God, I love this new, exciting century we live in. Find a meth lab at the drop of a hat? Goodness gracious.
My phone is weird. Does anybody, when they do these commercials on TV, when they say, Alexa, please do this, do people, when they're watching TV, does Alexa go on? Because you're watching TV and someone on TV says it? Like, I just said it. I'm imagining that there are some devices people, that started. What can I help you with? It's, it's 3 o'clock in the morning.
Well, yeah, that's the, that's the thing, is that, we used to have a commercial. We used to have a promotion reminding everybody you can listen to us on your smart devices. And we had to change the copy because we got so many complaints. But I have a Google Home. I got it for free with a Spotify subscription.
Yeah. Does it help you find meth labs?
No, it helps me make recipes. I keep it in my kitchen of all places.
All right.
But the thing that they did that was smart was you have to say okay first.
Oh.
You don't just say Google. You have to say okay or hey. You don't just say the name of the device and then it activates.
Oh, I see.
So that's kind of convenient.
I just remember, the story that I always go back to with these devices in your house and stuff like that, is that I remember the story from earlier this year where Alexa just started laughing in the middle of the night. Just for no reason, you'd just be going, I don't need that in my life. I don't need unexplained laughter coming out of an electric device at 4 o'clock in the morning. Just
no,
suddenly
thank you.
Dark in the kitchen. No, I don't need that. Should we start real quick and then, or should you want to break? What do you want to do here?
Let's go for it. Let's get a couple of
these in. Hold on a second. What am I doing here? We're doing this. So when I'm in your neck- F-bomb.
Out of context.
What's up?
Tell them where you're from.
Straight out of context.
That's right, straight out of context. This is when you listen to this radio station 24/7, as you should, because it's the best. And whenever anybody at any time says something that you can pull out of context and it sounds a little dirty and it makes you giggle, you jot down the day, the time, who said it, and send it to nickdshow@gmail.com. Straight out of context, let's go.
All right, first one here. We got a couple here from Brian, who sent these in. These are Lou Manfredini. Let's start with the first one.
While it's still wet, once a week, you give it a little squirt.
I wish Esmeralda were here.
I know, she loves them.
She loves the Lou Manfredini out of context. Okay.
All right. Next up is another Manfredini, again, from Brian. You'll like this one, I think.
When it's summer, are you cranking on this thing?
Only in the summer. None of the other seasons.
No,
only in the summer.
Prime time in the summer.
Yeah.
Prime time.
Okay.
All right. Let's throw in real quick here one for Dean. Everybody loves to hear Dean on the show. This one's coming to us from Tim.
Nobody wants to hear of anyone's isobars drooping.
God. What is happening on Sunday morning?
I don't know. I worked on Sunday mornings for a couple years. Yeah. And, It's just insanity.
Yeah.
Pure insanity.
Yeah. Between him and Schwann.
Those two are something else. And then Andy will come in with a zinger.
Yeah.
That's just what they do.
That's it. You got to listen to Dean on Sunday morning. He's great. Okay.
All right. Let's throw in John here, a little John Williams. This is always fun to hear him. This is another one from Brian.
If it feels like you're hauling Santa's sack on your back.
I like the festive music in the background as you're hauling Santa's sack. That's pretty funny.
I thought it was Santa's bag. Or,
no, it's a sack.
It's a sack.
Yeah, it's a sack.
Watch out for the sack.
Sack full of toys.
Okay.
All right.
All right, next up. I'll say this, a little preview. You're going to have a good week this week.
Oh, man.
Here it is. This one's coming to us from Carrie.
Can I do it till I need glasses? Now, that's the title of a movie that came out in the 70s. It was an anthology comedy movie, and it starred Robin Williams. So I didn't say that like as a statement, as a question to the people. I was just simply relaying the title of a 70s movie. That's all I was doing.
That's all.
Yeah.
That's all, everybody. Come on.
Yeah. All right.
All right. Here's one from Steve Cochran.
Well, it was a big package.
Who sent that?
That's coming to us from Brian.
Uh-huh.
Well, it was a big package.
He says it in a weird, kind of a creepy way as well.
Well, it was a big package.
Yeah, yeah. What's going on there?
I don't know. He's got a big package.
That's right.
You got to watch out.
Yeah. It's Christmas time. Lots of big packages around at Christmas time.
And then real quick, here's another one for Steve. And this is a fun one. This is coming to us from Rob.
And I'm sorry I stepped on your ding-dong there at the end.
That's pretty great. Let's take a break on that one, all right? Let's take a break. We need a couple of seconds for that. Sorry, I stepped on your ding-dong. That's pretty great. All right, straight out of context, we'll continue after this break here on 720 WGN.
So when I'm in your neighborhood, you better duck, because Ice Cube is crazy as
F-bomb.
Context.
What's up? Tell them where you're from.
Straight out of context.
There it is. We're back. Straight out of context. And this is when you listen to the radio station 24/7. Whenever anybody says anything that you can pull out of context, sounds a little dirty. You jot down the day, the time, who said it, and send it to nickdshow@gmail.com as we continue our Friday regular features. Okay, Tom, let's continue.
All right, next up, this is coming to us from Brian, and it's the great Demetrius Ivory from over at WGN News in the Weather Center.
Sure.
Here we go.
If there's an inch, that's a lot.
Oh, brother. Okay.
All right. This is another one for you.
Oh, man.
I know. You had quite a week. I won't lie to you. This is coming to us from Kevin all the way out in Iowa.
I like head. Oh, man. Oh, man. What was I talking about?
You were talking about different names for the toilet.
Oh, sure. Sure. All right.
All right. Another one for you here. This one's coming to us from our friend Wild Bill.
I did my duty. Oh. Yeah, you know, you can't say that word here anymore. You can't say that.
Duty. You got to say it. Duty.
Yeah. Even then, people will misinterpret it. What was I talking about?
You were talking about voting in the Chicago Film Critics Association.
Ah, yes.
Year list.
Yes, yes. And by the way, the nominations came out, and we'll have the winners announced, I believe, tomorrow. So on Sunday night into Monday morning with Eric and Steve here. We'll talk about the winners of the Chicago Film Critic Awards.
I'm very excited to see who wins.
Yeah, me too. I think we've got great choices. I'm thrilled that we nominated Elizabeth Moss for her Smell, and we're one of the only Film Critic Associations to, honor her.
Yeah.
In what I think is the best performance of the year.
Plus, then if she wins, she'll come visit.
Yeah. Who knows? And then we also nominated Adam Sandler, who's not getting as much love as he should. I know it's a crowded field. I realize that it's a crowded field, but man, he's unbelievable in Uncut Gems. He's amazing in it. Mm-hmm. So, all right. We'll do that Sunday night into Monday morning. Okay.
All right. Now, I wouldn't be straight out of context if I didn't get caught at least once.
By a Tom?
Yeah. Well, no, actually, it was Fox Valley Mike.
Oh, okay.
He is the one who has betrayed me this week. I like to keep my hands busy.
Oh, man. Yeah.
There you go.
Okay.
What do you know?
All right.
Another one from the Cochran Show. I couldn't tell who it was at first. I'm pretty sure this is Mary Vandeveld here, caught by Fox Valley Mike.
But now we'll eat it instead of shred it.
I think that is Mary.
Yeah,
I'm pretty sure that is Mary. Sounded a little weird, though.
Yeah.
But now we'll eat it instead of shred it.
Man, you know, maybe that's not Mary.
I couldn't tell.
It might not be Mary. Okay. Well, we'll figure it out.
It'll be the
eternal mystery. Okay, next.
All right. Next, coming from the Justin Kaufman Show, here's Justin caught by Jesse.
Yeah, that's got to be so hard.
Oh, man. Yeah, Justin Kaufman. All right.
That rascal. A little celebrity one here. It's Mr. Alex DeBrinket from the
The cat?
Yeah, the cat.
The cat made it to out of context.
He's favorite last name in hockey, honestly. DeBrinket.
Well, it's a great, and he's also been playing well.
He's doing a good job.
Yeah, he is. I mean, consistently the best guy on the team without question is Kane, even though the team's not playing. We have a Express to play back, too.
Absolutely.
So. All right, here's DeBrinket, right?
Yep, and this one's caught by Jesse.
That's a crucial time that we really need to score. And
all right, Cat. Okay.
You win this time. All right, I don't know if I've ever been here for one of these. Scott Catoon from the Startup Showcase.
No.
Is this a first time?
First time.
All right, rookie appearance, you know?
Yeah.
Not a bad one either. This is coming to us from Jesse.
But it enables me to get it in when I want to get it in.
Oh, man. That's a solid debut.
That's at least, I'd say, a triple.
That's a solid debut right there. All right.
All right. Next, coming to us from Kurt in Bridgeport. It's you again. Again, you had a really good week. I'm not kidding. The next three are you.
Oh,
the next three are you.
Come
on, man. Here's one from Kurt.
I'm not a Bush fan. Oh, man. I'm not a fan of the band Bush. That's what I meant. Okay.
All right, this one coming to us from Canadian Bill.
Enjoy the latex smell on your hand after you shake it.
I knew the minute I heard that.
Yeah, I should have known. We were talking about shaking hands with Steve Guttenberg, who likes to wear latex gloves to conventions. All right.
Here's another one.
It looks thick. Come on, man.
That's from Canadian Bill.
Come on, Canadian Bill. What did I ever do to you? Was I talking about the White Castle?
Yeah, no, you were talking about that was from yesterday morning. We were doing
hot chocolate.
Yeah.
Okay.
It was great.
That was fun.
That was a lot of fun. Okay. All right. Steve Cochran here. This is... Something else. This is from Shaughnessy in the Quad Cities.
Slobber-proof balls.
Do you think Steve's awake yet?
Oh, yeah, he's awake. He's got to be
slobber-proof
here.
Balls.
And you gotta love Mazur with the at the very end.
It's fantastic. I got to tell you, that might be one of my favorites of all time.
That's a great one.
And the delivery, Cochran's delivery is just beautiful, too.
Yeah.
Okay, what's next?
And then finally, we're capping it off with a Nick D.
Oh,
always good. And this one's from Wild Bill, Mr. Wild Bill.
Who requested the Willy? That's good. That's good. All right. I was talking about Willie Nelson. It was an innocent thing. Okay. All right. We'll get back to it again. We'll get back to it again next week. Here we go.
What do you do? No one else can dance like you. So what's all the fuss? There ain't nobody
spies.
Like
hey.
Someone took your plans away. So what's all the fuss? There ain't nobody
spies. Spies.
Like us.
That's right. So it's Nick D's show, Spies. This is when you listen to this radio station 24-7. Whenever I'm mentioned, we want to know about it. You become a spy. You jot down the day, the time, we set it, and send it to nickdshow@gmail.com. All right, what do we got?
All right, just a couple here, quick ones. This one was mentioned on the John Williams Show by Justin Coffin, and this is from Deanna.
Hoop dreams versus risky business. That's a tough one.
But those are equally Chicago.
And Nick DiGilio, he's going to say risky business. He's big into risky business.
That's right. That's right. You know, this whole thing that Justin Kaufman is doing, I filled out the brackets.
Mm.
Risky business was the winner. I knew that even before I looked at the brackets, risky business.
I went fugitive.
Yeah, that's a great one too. But risky business, man, that's the one.
Yeah.
Okay. And it's tough, though, but he's putting Risky Business and Hoop Dreams together.
That's tough.
It's tough because Hoop Dreams is an unbelievably great film, a beautiful movie.
Those guys over at Kotemkin are just...
They're amazing. But the problem is Risky Business is my second favorite movie of all time.
So,
and I was 18 when I saw it. You know, I was between high school and college, and it spoke to me, even though I'm not a rich kid from Glencoe. But I love that movie. I still do. The ending is just a kid gets into Princeton because he's corrupt, because he's a pimp, and I think that says so much.
Yeah, eat your heart out, Princeton.
Gets into Princeton because he's a pimp. I mean, what is this? And that was at the beginning of the decade, at the beginning of the '80s. Paul Brickman nailed the '80s. 3 years in.
Well, you know what Juicy J always says. It's hard out here for a pimp.
That's right.
All right.
All right. This is one more here?
Yep, one more. All this right. is from the Matt Bubala Show.
Okay.
So this was caught by, our friend Wild Bill. And this is a caller calling in and mentions you.
Oh, you know what? I thought of another one with John Cusack. It's a love story.
High Fidelity?
Not that one. Another one. Yeah, that's it. Say Anything.
And is Say Anything set in Chicago?
I know.
I don't know if it is.
I know the opening is it comes together with Nick and DiGiulio. That's what he says on that movie. You know, he mentions Nick and you know that
right.
that opening that Nick DiGiulio does.
Right.
No, it's not. It's not Say Anything. The opening's from The Sure Thing. That, hey, Nick's your buddy. That's from The Sure Thing. And by the way, no, Say Anything does not take place in Chicago. It takes place in Seattle. It's a Cameron Crowe movie. It takes place in Seattle. But that beginning soundbite that I play every night on the show, that's from The Sure Thing. That's from Rob Reiner's movie, The Sure Thing, which is just a charming, charming take on It Happened One Night. That was The Sure Thing. And Say Anything is that takes place in Seattle. High Fidelity takes place in Chicago, but Say Anything takes place in Seattle. I just wanted to clear that up. All right, well, keep listening, everybody. Be spies. Whenever I mention, jot it all down. Let's do this. We'll take a break, and then we'll come back. We've got a Blackhawks Express to play, and then we'll play a few funky songs. We got time for just a few funky songs.
Down to center ice we go. It's going to be Atkinson taking the draw for Columbus against David Kemp.
The drop of the puck, this game's underway, and the Jackets control. As down to center ice we go. The drop of the puck, this one's underway, and the Hawks control. Firing the puck down the boards in the Arizona zone. Picked off in the far corner by former Hawk Jordan Osterley. Passing head, Brad Richardson put it in over the Hawk line. Michael Grabner, he shoots and scores. Grabner from the right wing circle fired a pretty backhand up into the top left corner. This beats Leonard. And the Coyotes lead the game 1-0 with 2:56 gone in period one. Loose puck into the near corner. Former Hawk Vinny Hinostroza flips it behind the net. To Jordan Osterley, headman pass into the Hawk zone down the slot. There's a shot now by Keller. He scores. You know, it was a stretch pass, and the Coyotes, this is a set play for them. Osterley with a nice pass ahead to Clayton Keller, who was poaching at the Hawk blue line. He rode in on Leonard and fired it through his pads. It's 2-0 Arizona. Hinostroza racing down the right side Hawk zone, put the puck in front, deflected wide by Grabner. Hinostroza got it back to Chychrun, a long shot, they score. It was tipped in front. Brad Richardson looked like he got a stick in there at the last second. And this one eludes Robin Leonard with 4:56 now left in period number one. It's 3-0 Coyotes. To Nick Schmaltz along the near boards, he lost it down to Gilbert. Passing to center ice, here's Taves. Crossing the Coyote line, put it down the left wing, Kubalik. He shoots, save, rebound, score! Jonathan Taves was right there at the top of the crease, and he snapped it past Kemper up into the top shelf. And the Hawks are on the board with their 13th shot of the night. They trail 3-1. Here's Nick Schmaltz off the draw. He moves into the slot, shoots, and scores! With a clean face-off win, Schmaltz, who was lined up along the left wing boards, picked up the puck near the top of the left circle, took a couple of strides, and fired a wrist shot past Leonard. It's now 4-1 Arizona with 11:35 left in period number two. Kessel into the Hawk zone, right wing to Soderberg, through the slot to the left circle to Kessel on the doorstep. He shoots, and Leonard is down with a butterfly save and stopped Kessel twice on some point-blank chances. Poked the puck to the corner to Brinkett, who put it behind the Coyote net to Strome. The Kane near the right point to Gustafson of the line to their Brinkett left circle. Shoot, save, rebound, score! Dylan Strome caught off a check in front from Chychrun, took the rebound off to the Brinkett shot, and with a backhanded slap, he put it in behind Kemper. It's a power play goal, and the Hawks trail 4-2 with 7:02 left in the third. Seabrook takes the puck and slots it back across the rink and back down to the near corner, Coyote zone. 2:19 left in the third, 4-2 Arizona.
Keep an eye on Robin Leonard here. If the Hawks can get some possession in the offensive zone.
Now Dvorak got the puck. He put it in front of the net. And Keller fires. Did that go in the net? Yep. I believe it did. Yeah, let's see.
It's in.
The red light never went on.
When I grew up on the farm, fly was something we sprayed to kill, and jam was something we put on our breakfast toast.
Jam. Fly jam. Fly Jams Friday.
Oh, yeah. This is Fly Jam Friday on your overnight radio with my man, Nick D, on 720 WGN.
Johnny Kemp, baby, just got paid. Fly Jams Friday. I'm Wiki Wiki Nicky. And Viggity Viggity Vic Double V Verified Double V is running around like a lunatic somewhere. And it's Luscious Hush. Is he here?
Oh, yeah, Luscious Hushes, baby.
There it is. And by the way, the news is next from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom right here on WGN. All right, we got some requests for some fly jams. Get a little funky on this Friday morning.
Tons of requests.
All right.
What better way to kick it off with a little Donna Summer, the queen of Friday nights, with On the Radio from Mike in Louisville.
So you remember when we were talking about Jodie Foster?
Yeah.
And I brought up the movie Foxes?
Mm-hmm.
That song was in Foxes. On the radio was in Foxes. Opening credits of Foxes. which features Scott Baio being chased on his skateboard by a car.
Wow.
Yeah, Scott Baio.
Everybody loves Scott Baio.
They did a couple of movies together, Jodie Foster and Scott Baio. They were in this
really?
Great movie called Bugsy Malone.
Yeah, that's the one where the kids shoot ice cream?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a gangster movie with kids. Alan Parker.
I know. we talked about this, Nick, please. I'm begging you, give me some time.
All right. Okay, what is our next requestal?
All right, our next request is coming to us. It's Brian McKnight.
Oh, yeah.
Little Brian McKnight. And, of course, it's back at one. It's coming to us from our friend Dino. Thank you so much, Dino. You're the best.
If all things in time will reveal, one, you're like a dream come true. Two, just wanna be with you. Three, girl, it's plain to see that you're the only one for me. And four, repeat steps one through three.
Yeah, man, Brian McKnight.
How many kids dance at their prom to that?
How many? That's Brian McKnight, always fly.
So fly.
Always fly, man. Some people sometimes are fly. Brian McKnight, always fly.
About as fly as they come.
Yeah. He's the flyiest.
You know, I never actually knew who that was.
Like, McKnight?
I mean, I've heard that. I didn't know it was Brian McKnight. I knew who Brian McKnight was.
Yeah.
But I would hear that song all the time. And I was just like, who sings this?
McKnight, man.
I was a fool.
All right.
Darn
next
fool.
Request for Fly Jams.
All right. This is coming to us from Javon in Dallas. It's a band called The Internet. And the song is called Roll Burbank Funk.
Internet?
Yeah, the internet.
Did Al Gore invent them?
I can only assume.
Okay. All right. I never heard those guys before. We got time for one more?
We got time for one more. Let's go for a little Christmas classic.
Yeah.
This is from Ike. It's Santa Claus, Go Straight to the Ghetto.
Yeah, man, James Brown.
Leave something fruity for Donnie. And don't forget about Gary. Santa Claus. Go straight to the ghetto. Santa Claus, go straight to the ghetto. Tell him James Brown sent you. Go straight to the ghetto. You know that I know what you will see, 'cause that was once me. Hit it.
It's one of my favorite Christmas songs ever. Santa Claus goes straight to the ghetto. The great James Brown.
So good.
All right. Okay. More Fly Jams. We'll do it again next week, as we will all the regular Friday features. And then we've got the weekend off, obviously. I hope everybody has a really great weekend. And when we come back, we got a lot of new movies to review. It's going to be fun. We'll have Steve and Eric on to talk about the movie reviews, and we will unveil the winners of the Chicago Film Critic Awards, which the nominees are out right now. The winners will be announced, I believe, tomorrow night. And so we'll talk about it Sunday night and Monday morning. So lots of great stuff coming up. And, of course, my dad will tell a joke. Let's break here, and then we got the WGN Morning News TV coming up.